Blog Talk Radio.
We have before us the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a new world order, a world where the rule of law, not the law of the jungle, governs the conduct of nations. When we are successful, and we will be, we have a real chance at this new world order.
Staring right at 2018, as if mankind's atrocities for man has no history. But just a glance at life at 2000 BC, we find traces of man's inhumanity to man. There's no mystery.
Okay. Welcome in, everyone. You're locked into the Search Engine International. I'm your host, Brother Gaja. Bringing everybody here for another week. This week's topic, paganism. All right? What is paganism? When did it start, paganism? Who are the practices of paganism in the earth today? Joining me in the studio, I have Steve, who's a high priest, and I also have John, also who's a high priest. I'm gonna bring them in just in a minute, and then I let them introduce themselves as we go on to the show. As usual, the numbers to call in, 646-200-4309, and if you're listening via Skype, you can also partake on the show via Skype. What else? Let me see. Yes, the listeners in the UK, I want to say hello to them down in London, Bradford, and Manchester. The listeners down there in Jamaica who tuning in as well. And another bulletin. We had a sister today in Manchester who met in an accident, got hit down by a car, and asking for everyone if to send some prayers out for the young sister. All right, and that's it. So without further ado, let's get the ball rolling. All right, let me bring him in. Is it Steve?
Yes, this is Steve. Merry meet.
I'm here in the clearly, man. How you doing?
Doing okay. How about you?
I'm good, man. I'm good. My name is Brother Gajo.
Gajo? Okay. I also go by Duve, but I'm not going to make anyone else pronounce that.
Duve.
Steve is fine.
Okay, Steve. All right. And we also have John.
Yes. Hello. My name is John.
Hi, John. How are you doing?
Very good. Thank you for inviting me to your show. Merry meet, brothers.
Not a problem, man. Not a problem. All right. What I'm going to do, right, I'm going to let Steve introduce himself real quick. And then after that, John, then you can do the same, okay?
Yes.
All right, Steve, the floor is yours.
Okay, well, I'm the high priest of Coven Oldenwild. It's a Wiccan coven in Asheville, North Carolina. I'll spell it for you. It's Oldenwild, Oldenwilde, and that's .org if anybody wants to look it up. But we've been in existence since 1995 here, and we're open public witches in the southeastern U.S., so sort of in the heart of the Bible Belt. And that brings forth a lot of stories, which maybe for later on. But we do a lot of civic activism here and try to educate people in the beauty and the antiquity and the validity of what we call the old religion.
Okay. All right. Is that it, Steve?
Well, I can mention my high priestess is Lady Passion, but she's unfortunately not able to be with us this evening. We do usually most covens are run by a high priestess and a high priest. So I'll just mention that real quick.
All right, let me get this right. Are you the one who won't be joining us for the full duration of the show?
Yes, I will. Yeah, she's unfortunately not able to be here this evening, but sends her best wishes.
Okay, will you be on for the full duration, or do you have to go early as well?
No, I can be here for the full shot.
All right, man, that's a good one. All right, then, we're going to get back to that. Is it John?
Yes.
How you doing, John?
Very good, thank you. So my name is John. I am also a high priest of a coven. We call ourselves Golden Thread Grove Church, and we also link that with the ATC, as we are charter members of the Aquarian Tabernacle Church, headquartered in Index, Washington. The mission of the Aquarian Tabernacle Church is to bring these little covens and these little autonomous groups together as one big organization, giving us validity and strength of numbers and solidarity. Worldwide, we have organizations through the ATC in many countries.
Okay.
So Golden Thread Grove is an autonomous working coven. We have open circle meetings every week, where anybody is welcome to come and attend. We have a prison ministry. We have a lending library. We offer service to our community in that way, again, trying to bring honor and service to the old gods, and to show the world that people that practice paganism today, people that venerate the old gods and the old ways, are your neighbors and just as normal as anyone else in the world.
And okay, let me ask you, is it non-profit?
It is non-profit, yes.
Okay, then. So where did you get your funding from?
Where did I get what?
Where did you get your funding from?
From members. From members and contributors. Myself and my wife are the high priest and high priestess of this organization. We do have a store here, a metaphysical store, called Crone's Cupboard. We're here in Boise, Idaho.
Right.
And we do donate and support the church quite a bit, offering space and making contributions to supporting that. But our funding comes from our members.
Okay then. So let me ask the question. What is Wiccan? Wicca? What is it? What is that?
Well, Wicca is the name of our religion, and a Wiccan is a person who practices it. It's more or less synonymous with witchcraft, and it's a type of paganism.
Okay.
So we are basically a polytheistic nature religion, which means we consider nature sacred, and we believe in and honor more than one god, more than one goddess.
Right. But
most
but
of us. Now, anything I say is going to be applying to most Wiccans. We're very autonomous groups. There's no one big central, you know, Wiccan central like with the Roman Catholic Church. So it's all but it's basically we pretty much all hold a shared feeling that this is the right and the natural path for us.
Right. Well, I just heard you said you refer to yourself as a church, right?
No, we don't call ourselves a church. Many, other groups do. We, although we are also, like John's group, we're also a nonprofit, and we're legally, a legal religious nonprofit here in North Carolina. But also like theirs, we just, you know, subsist on donations as far as that goes. There's no grand secret funding source, unfortunately, unless he knows of one and wants to tip me off.
right. So tell me, you say you worship more than one god, yeah?
That's correct. Yeah, and most people that come to the craft, they've experienced different gods and goddesses, or they've had experiences that make them kind of question the kind of the standard ideology that I sometimes call monotheism, the idea that there's only one God and only one way, and only one way to that truth and that God. Some people like our particular coven, our main deities, the ones we revere most highly for ourselves, are Hecate, the old witch goddess, and the horn god, which some call Hearn, and unfortunately some people confuse with the devil, which is completely, completely wrong, and I'm sure we'll be getting into that at some point.
Okay, then. So tell me something. In a country like America, then, for argument's sake, right?
Mm-hmm.
Would you say America is a what you refer to as a monotheist country, or would you call it a pagan country, then, so to speak, worshiping more than one god?
I'd call it a pluralist country. It's written into the very First Amendment of our Constitution, freedom of religion. So it means, for instance, like last week when that whole world scandal erupted about the video denigrating Muhammad,
mm-hmm.
A lot of people protesting in other countries didn't understand why the U.S. government was letting that video be circulated. They couldn't take it down because that's part of our, you know, belief here in America is it's got freedom of religion. Even if it offends people, you're still free to express it.
Right.
So that's a key thing here.
Right. So what religion would you say they practice in America? For example, the Christians over there now, what do you think, what religion do they practice? Because I see a lot of, what you call, pagan pagan traditions within the religion Christianity?
Well, in fact, you delve deep enough into the roots of any religion, and that's what you're going to find is what I call the natural religion.
Hold on, Steve. I hear John wants to comment on that.
Can I jump in here just a moment, please?
Sure.
I think that we need to start by defining what is paganism.
Okay, then. What is it?
Well, I believe that paganism, as it's defined today, is earth-based spirituality.
Okay.
The word, by my understanding, comes from the meaning country dwellers, people who lived in the rural parts in relationship with the land, like the farmers, almost like we would, almost derogatory when it started to be used a lot, like we would use the term redneck, those people who are backwards and live in the countryside and aren't up with the times like us in the cities.
Okay.
And then the word, through its usage, started to take on the meaning and the implication that if one was pagan, then they were godless. They had no faith. They had no belief, which is a misconception and not true.
Okay.
And many of these folk traditions and these elder spiritual practices of the indigenous peoples of the world have been ritualized and customized where they've fallen into the space of tradition, and then they've been picked up by the next group coming along and adapted into the modern holidays and celebrations and traditions that we have today in their many forms and faces.
Okay, and who are these people are we referring to? Call names.
All people. So in America, we practice Christmas, which is largely, most people think, a Christian holiday, but it has its roots and its traditions going back long before the Christ and the evergreen trees and the lights. It has always been a celebration of the return of the light upon the earth and the child of light and the child of hope and promise long before Master Jesus ever walked this earth.
Right. So,
and John's right, and you look at Easter also, and that's the dawn of the year, just like the dawn of the day. It's even named in English after a pagan goddess of the dawn, Eostra. And the more you look into so many of the traditions around Jesus, you'll realize that there are also traditions around the sun, you know, the solar deities.
Let me ask, how comes modern Christians can't pick up on this?
How come what?
How comes modern-day Christians cannot pick up on this fact?
Well, because it's what I call one-way-onlyism. You know, it's this idea, and it's not just confined to Christianity, but it's this idea that there is absolutely only one way to the truth, and it's got to be through this one person's interpretation of this one holy book that came from this one source, and it's like having blinders on. You can only see what you're allowed to see, I think. I know a lot of fundamentalist Christians who just refuse to read anything that hasn't been pre-approved by their particular church.
Okay.
And it goes a step further, too, Steve, in that my way is the only way, and my interpretation is the only correct interpretation. And even though we're using the same book and working with the same deity, my way is the right way, and you got it wrong.
Yeah, exactly. It's very self-centered.
And what books are you referring to now?
From a Christian standpoint, I'm referring to the Bible.
Okay, so what are your views on the Bible?
It's a great story. It's a wonderful myth.
Okay.
It contains many things that we recognize from many other pagan myths and stories, but we have, I think most pagans and Wiccans see kind of a conflict, for instance,
in
the way that...
When you say it has many stories and myths in it, I'm taking that you have actually read it then.
Oh, yes.
Well,
yeah, most... Most Wiccans and pagans are very very well read, you'll find, tend to have a lot of scholars in our midst.
Okay, so you have read the Bible then?
Yeah.
Yeah, if I can inject in here, you know, I think dominantly from a dominant religion perspective, the United States is a Christian country. And many of us practicing Wiccans and pagans of all different traditions have grown up with a Christian background and a Christian foundation. So we've all been introduced to the Bible. We all know those stories. And even if we grew up in a household where that wasn't practiced, there's no way culturally you can get away from that teaching and that learning, worldview.
Well, why I asked you the question, right, is because why I asked you that question is because you said you've read it, right? And then later on into the show, I'm gonna try and go into that a little bit, okay?
Okay, yeah.
I'm gonna try and go into the Bible based on the fact that you have actually read it. You understand me? Because I know there are a lot of people out there who claim that they have been reading the Bible, and they read it, and I know that you know. But being that you said you have, we're gonna go into that. All right. So what you saying? Just one more question in regards to that. Like you'd say, you were brought up in a Christian home. Do you believe the people of the Bible are real?
You know what?
Sure. I believe that they lived at one time. Sure.
Okay.
I think it depends. One thing that we don't have a problem with is archaeology and the findings of science. And there are a lot of archaeological, you know, there's a lot of evidence that, you know, yes, some of those people are real. Some maybe not, you know. But the important point is not, you know, we're not fundamentalists. We're not really focused on the absolute literal truth of whatever we read. We try to take away more of the symbolism and the message in it. It's kind of like, you know, like watching a really good movie. You don't automatically assume that's exactly how things happen, but you try to take away the moral of the story.
Okay.
So that's one thing that separates a lot of us from the families and households that we grew up in, because there are quite a few fundamentalists in America.
Right. So all right then.
Can I jump in here too? You know, well, we can talk about the Bible, but understand, you know, I have read it. I haven't read it cover to cover, word for word. I haven't memorized it, and I don't myself have certain opinions about it. I don't believe it's word for word true. So I'm not an expert to talk on the topic of what's in that book, but I can certainly give you my opinion from my perspective if that's what you're looking for.
No, don't worry, man. We'll go into it. We'll go into it as the show goes on. You understand? I just want, you know, I want the listeners who are tuning in to get an understanding of, you know, what you're about, what you're dealing with, and all that. Now, one of the things that I have heard, yes, and I say heard, meaning that I heard that within one a religion such as what is it, Wicca. Wicca or what you call paganism, you know, you deal with sacrifices. Is that true?
No. No. That's a Hollywood myth taken over from, you know, basically Christian accusations during the Inquisition, claiming that Christians would steal unbaptized babies and sacrifice them to the devil and all manner of lurid stories, which is exactly what they are, lurid stories. And,
so you're saying that there's you being a high priest, you've never performed any ritualistic sacrifices, no?
Not of any living being, no. Definitely of a drop of wine that will pour out of a cup, you know, to the gods, called a libation, or maybe a loaf of bread at a holiday, you know. But no, we're very, Wiccans are very respectful of life. We're animists. We believe that the universe around us has soul and spirit and is alive. Even things that people don't ordinarily think of as alive, like stones and mountains and such. So so we tend to be very respectful of life, and we don't know. In fact, we find it kind of ironic that people are always accusing us of sacrifice when, you know, everyone who's sent off to war to be killed is said to be sacrificing his life, you know, or people don't have a problem with, you know, grinding up cows for hamburger, but boy, if somebody in a third world country, you know, which is still a valid tradition in many indigenous religions.
How about you, John? What do you have to say about sacrifices?
Well, brother, define for me what it is you're referring to as sacrifice.
I'm referring to, you know, whether it be sacrificing an animal, sacrificing a human, you know, a baby, whatever.
Go ahead. Go on, sorry. Forgive me for interrupting you.
No, it's okay. It's okay. Go on, what are you saying?
We do not kill living creatures.
Okay, then.
For the purpose of religious practice. Some of us, many of us, eat meat, so we kill creatures to sustain our own life.
Right.
And that may be considered a sacrifice.
Right.
To me, I define sacrifices to make sacred, almost the same definition as to consecrate. And sacrifice is always additive. It's always adding to the more. So more prayer, giving of your time, your energy, your resources to the betterment of someone or something else beyond yourself and your own self-fulfillment. So like our brother Steve was saying, offering wine, offering bread, giving gifts back to the nature spirits, giving these gifts of prayer and energy to our brothers and sisters, going without something so that someone else might have something, that is a sacrifice, and that is the kind of sacrifice that we make. But never do we take another's life. For a sacrifice to be effective and to work and hold any power at all, it must be willing, and it must be given from the person who is hoping to perpetuate it forward.
So okay, then. So I'm taking that you do some level of sacrifice then. So what would the purpose of your sacrifice be for then?
To make sacred. So here's one way that we make sacrifice. We fast all day long, not taking in any food, and then we take the money that we would have spent on meals and food and donate that to the food bank with our prayers and with our energy of abstinence, that power and that energy would go forth and feed people, and that might ease some of the suffering and some of the hunger that's in the world. That's a sacrifice. That's one that holds power.
Okay, then. I don't know who can come in and explain this one to me. What's the origin of your religion? Where is it? Where does it come from?
Well, it's the indigenous religion of Europe. In other words, the native religion of Europe. I often compare it to Native American religion, only this is what they were doing in Europe until even during the time that Christianity tried to wipe it out. Different people draw from different threads of that. Some people draw it from England. Some people draw it from Scandinavia, you know, the Norse myths. Some people from all different cultures in Europe. But it tends to be all pretty much drawn from the pre-Christian religions of Europe.
Would
you agree with that, John?
Yes, absolutely. Well spoken.
Okay, so you said that it's from Europe. The origins of it is European. That's what you're telling me.
Basically, yeah. Now, you know, one thing about magic is it knows no national boundaries. So you'll find, we published Lady Passion and I published a book a few years ago called The Goodly Spellbook. It's a spell book, and it's still available, by the way. But in it, in the course of writing it and doing a lot of the research, we were just stunned again and again by how often we would find the same spells in Russian magic as we'd find in English magic, as we'd find in Sioux Indian magic. Here's one example. Everywhere you go around the world, people honor the four directions. It's just the natural thing to do. They'll honor the east, the west, the south, and the north, and they'll have correspondences with them. Like there'll be different colors, different animals that are sacred to them, maybe a little different meanings, but they're always sacred. And whenever they're cutting out defining sacred space that they're going to do a ritual in, they'll honor each of those directions.
Okay.
Can I jump in here just a moment, please?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
I need to get going, brother. I didn't clear much more time out of my schedule, and I need to bid you farewell. I can see that you are in very good hands with my brother Steve, who is very well-spoken and represents our faith very adequately and very nobly.
Okay.
Well,
I agree with everything that he said so far. Do you have any final questions?
Point afterwards or get in contact, John. I'd like to talk more with you by email, if you don't mind.
I like that. I got your oldandwild.org. Can I leave you a note there?
Absolutely, yeah. You can email us through there, yeah.
Okay, I'll do that.
Okay, thank you. Blessed be.
Blessed be, brother.
Okay, John, thank you for coming on. Hopefully we'll probably get to speak to you again. Maybe next time after the show. But okay, so Steve, you're going to be with us for the full duration.
Yeah. I've been able to set aside the whole evening. We're kind of coming up on our holiest holiday of the year, which is called Samhain, which is also Halloween, October 31st.
Halloween is a pagan holiday. I never know that.
Oh, absolutely, yeah, and it's a lot of the fundamentalist churches here very much object to it, but. But, yeah, you're honoring the spirits of the dead, of your dead, and of all the ones of your village, of your community, all your ancestors who came before. And that's kind of universal. Like in Mexico, the Day of the Dead, people will, on that, you know, it's like just a couple days after our Halloween, but it's the same, right around the same time, they, you know, all their families get together and do rituals for the departed spirits of their ancestors.
I thought Halloween was all about the kids and having the candy and you know the going around and you know the getting the streets and dressing up. I had no idea it had any significance.
Originally, that started as as a form of offering. Well, you read different scholars have slightly different theories about it, basically, but it all seems to roll around to the children represent the spirit of new life, you know, the new generation, and giving them candies and gifts, you're in a way kind of honoring the spirits that have gone before that, and trying to kind of make sure they don't come around and cause too much mischief. The whole thing of kids causing tricks or treats, well, part of that goes back to, you want to prevent the spirits that maybe weren't given a proper send-off from causing mischief like poltergeists do and so forth. It's said to be a time of the year when the veil between the worlds is at its thinnest.
I find that very funny because most of the people that I see, send the children out on Halloween, what you would call, good Christian people. Now, do they know that they're sending their child out to perform in something totally opposite or contrary to what they believe? No,
I don't think they think of it that way. And I, that's not really. I wouldn't say that's really what they're doing. That's the origin of it, and. The origin of it, it's not necessarily what people are consciously doing nowadays. We try to be conscious about it, and we do try to, when our rituals, we do try to honor the ancestors and, people that have come before and given us what we have today are no longer with us.
Okay,
here in the Bible Belt, a lot of fundamentalist churches, especially since we've been so public, they will object to Halloween, and they'll have things called trunk or treat, where they just have the poor kids go around, not even necessarily in costume, and get candy from the trunks of other parents' cars in the parking lot. You know, it's kind of pitiful, but in my opinion, anyway.
All right, man. Cool. You're locked into the Search Engine International. I'm your host, Brother Gadger. And at this point in time, the topic tonight is paganism, Wiccan witchcraft, Wicca. We have a high priest pagan, Steve, with us today. And at this point in the show, I'm going to introduce Elder Rakar to the show. Elder Rakar, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me clearly?
I'm hearing you clearly, man. How are you?
I'm blessed. Thank you, brother, for allowing me this evening to come on. Thank you. And I would like to say hi to Steve.
Hi. How you doing? Merry meet
you. Okay. Bless you, brother.
Blessed be.
All right. So I just wanted to come in, Gaja. I was listening to the show.
Okay.
And Steve, excuse me, what is your full name, if you don't mind me asking you?
No, not at all. My full mundane name is Steve Rasmussen. That's Rasmussen. And I have an equally unpronounceable craft name, which is a magical name, Diuve, which is D-I-U-V-E-I. And that's I can explain that later. It's based on a dead language.
Okay. Well, let me tell you, I'm glad you came on because it was a beautiful purpose for having you on the show this evening. And by any means, we're not here to attack you or to demean you or anything, but, you know, all due respect to whatever you're dealing with, we do believe in the Bible. So I'm not here for a Bible debate. Actually, we invited you on because of our knowledge of, well, I've done some research on the religions of the earth. And last week, we actually had a pastor on, a pastor of a church on. And I said, you know what, the best thing we can do this week is let's invite someone who actually have knowledge of the origin of this Christian religion. You understand? Because all due respect to him, he was coming off in a condescending kind of way. And like you've mentioned, like your partner mentioned earlier, saying, well, this is the way and no other way is the truth, without the knowledge of telling his parishioners and those that were amongst his parishioners that his religion was founded on paganism. So the best thing we could do is have a pagan come on and tell the truth with the origin of that particular religion as far as Easter, Christmas, like you mentioned, which is the Roman Saturnalia. Even, and I know they don't know this either, but I wanted to mention the original worship of the sun, which was Sunday. That was stolen from pagans.
Well, yeah. In fact, every day of the week is named after one of the astrological planets. Well, I mean, originally in different languages.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So now, Monday is Moon Day. Tuesday is actually Mars Day. And we actually, we use that. That's traditionally used in magic for timing spells. And I mean, that's not the only thing that the ancients used it for, but that really is quite a bit of the origin of it. And I find that fascinating to see that people don't really realize that, though it's right
around us. I'm perplexed how a lot of these Christians can come off in a pompous type of way and tell everyone that their true way is the light when they actually, the people they are attacking and going against is religion. They stole their religion from paganism.
Well, exactly. That's what a lot of us puzzle about, especially since a lot of us are very persecuted by them. My theory about it, honestly, is that it's like, you know what happens when you take, say, a river and really channel it down into a tight little nozzle, you get an extremely intense flow flow like a fire hose. You get an extremely intense flow of water, and it can be very destructive, and it's very narrow and focused. Well, I think that's what happens when people who are spiritual have genuine spiritual impulse, you know, as most people really naturally do. They channel it so tightly down into that, you know, it's one God, one book, one way of reading that book, one way of thinking about that God, and it's this one. It's like monotheism, monotheism, monopoly. Anytime you see people saying there's only one way, well, you know, then they have to go around saying that every other way is evil. And
well, all due respect, we believe that there's one way.
Well,
you
might
understand?
Mean something different, though, from
exactly,
that.
Exactly, exactly. We believe it's one way, but the whole point about it is we understand that the religions that are taught today and the doctrines that are taught today are not founded on the truth contained in the Bible. There's no place in the Bible you can find Christmas. There's no place in the Bible you can find Easter. Christ or no one in the Bible, to tell you, I'm a Hebrew, okay? I am a Hebrew.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I study Hebrew, I know Hebrew, I've studied the Bible, and once you are awakened to truth and you read the Bible as it is written, outside of religious influence, you come to find out that what these people are saying have nothing to do with the Bible at all.
Yes.
And you understand?
Absolutely,
and
The
shocking part of that, the shocking part of that is when we figure this out, when we go to people and say, well, listen, it's not talking about that, they walk with blinders on. So other people reject the Bible because they believe that there's some double speaking going on.
Mm-hmm.
How can you tell somebody that my way is the only way when you're doing things that came from paganism, and the Bible actually speaks about the one God. It speaks about the Hebrews. It speaks about, you know, because the Gentiles, preferably the Gentiles, were dealing with polytheism. Like you were saying, like a lot of the polytheism that's going on in paganism today, or that you can trace it back to Europe, but before Europe, ancient Babylon, ancient Egypt. So it's not just European origin and paganism. You want to say that?
Well, it's universal, and we believe it's universal because it's natural. Now, let me explain a little bit more about what we mean behind polytheism. It's not that we think that every god is separate and just associated with one tribe, that sort of thing, which is kind of the impression that I'll be honest, the Hebrew priests that edited the Old Testament seem to have tried to give. I think that in the New Testament you kind of see a different kind of one. You know, not saying that my one is more powerful than everybody else's one, but saying that all is one, you know, all beings are one, and that we're all united by spirit, and that includes the gods, and that includes...
I've read the New Testament, and I've taught the New Testament, and they go one and the same, but I'm not going to sit... There's nothing in the New Testament that deviates from the God of the Old Testament. That's another misnomer that's taught by Christians.
I guess I would... Say I find a different emphasis there in the teachings of Jesus from the teachings of Moses, say, but maybe that's...
You would?
In that sense that I just mentioned, yeah, I find that, for instance, Jesus often speaks in paradoxes, which, you know, as ye sow, so shall ye reap, easier for a rich man, I mean, for a camel and the needle and that sort of thing, and that's very magical. That's because that's to us, we see that the whole universe is built around polarity, duality, oppositions, yin and yang, night and day, up and down, right and left. And to see that, you know, which is kind of a duality, which is one reason, by the way, why many Wiccans worship a god and a goddess as their chief deity because they're, you know, calling upon that polarity. But now what the sages like Jesus will often do is twist that and say, well, look at it backwards, look at it upside down, and that's the way to wisdom, you know. They're kind of drawing your attention to how we get trapped in those dualities.
Well, I do agree to the point where Christ was bringing the spirit of the law opposed to, he was bringing the forgiveness of the law, but he didn't come to change what his Father sent him to do it. As far as what we know in the Bible and what we read, he even said himself, Matthew 5:17, think not that I've come to destroy the law or the prophets. I've come not to destroy but to fulfill. Now, what I have to ask you, because, I mean, there's a lot of information that came out here, and I just have some questions just for my sake now. But
sure, yeah.
I mean, because in the first couple of minutes, you both came on and y'all willed it out, and y'all were straight. Y'all came and said Easter and all those things, but we really want Christians out there to hear this because it seems to me. Now, let me tell you, I'm gonna be straight. I'm a Hebrew. I believe in the Bible, like I said before. I believe that there is only one God. His name is Ahayah, the God who parted the Red Sea, and allowed our people to go free from the Egyptians who bound our people. All right?
Okay.
I also believe that the book is a book of prophecy, that the people that have been colonized by Europeans and have been taken down by the people all over the earth, the imperialists, the European powers, which are the Romans, which are really the high pagan, we believe that they are the original Romans. They hide themselves behind politics or whatever, and they have taken down the children of Israel and we're in bondage once again. And I'm not going by allegory. This is prophecy according to the Bible. But I just want to let you know so we can be on equal terms of what we both believe. I listen to you. I want to ask you a few things based on some of the things you've said earlier. All right. If you don't mind. And I'm not going to try to come against you or anything like that. I just got to ask you some questions here.
Question.
Now, there was a time, there was a time in which the pagans were burned at the stake.
Yes.
Now, we all know that history, predominantly during the Dark Ages.
Well, actually, predominantly known as the Renaissance, sadly, continuing especially through, even up through the 1600s, yeah.
Reason why up to the 1600s, and I know this is not normally publicized, but there's a lot of skewed history of the Dark Ages. When the Roman Empire was taken down in 193 A.D. under Septimius Severus and Picenius Niger, there was, believe it or not, a majority of black rule in Europe that's being hid by modern-day historians. Up until James the First and Sixth, the reason the Europeans needed a renaissance or a rebirth is because at that time you had dark rule. And what was happening, well, we'll discuss that, what was happening, why certain people was being burned at the stake. But I want to ask you, at what point did pagans come from underground and present themselves back to public without the threat of being burned at the stake?
Well, it started until the early 1950s when the in England the witchcraft law was repealed, the law that had made it illegal to be a witch. And at that time,
what year?
It was about 1954, I think. I might have that off by one or two. I'm bad with numbers. Either 51 or 54. So early 1950s.
What do English law have to do with America? I thought America broke from the British rule.
Yeah, well, there were a lot of laws here.
There
were also a lot of laws here that punished people for being witches. In fact, we, Lady Paston and I, maybe about 10 years ago, overturned one here that banned divination and fortune telling.
Okay, but you deal with divination.
Excuse me? No, the law in England just allowed a man named Gerald Gardner to come forth and say, I'm a witch and I'm a member of a coven that goes way back, and here's its traditions, here's what they do, and I'm going to publicize it because I'm afraid these people are getting old and they're going to die out if there's not some new folks that find out about what a wonderful, you know, thing this is. Just to put it in a nutshell, and that kind of, you know, because he was very public about it, opened a museum and everything of witchcraft, people started being more open here in America, and, you know, and then with the rise of feminism in the 70s, that really opened it up, because it really does revolve around priestesses. It's a very much, you know, I mean, there are plenty of men in the craft like me, but you know, it's really kind of fundamentally centered on priestesses. And
well, Steve, I'm a little perplexed, I'm a little confused.
Yeah, I'm jumping
around.
Aren't
you Jewish? Aren't you Jewish, sir?
Am I Jewish?
Yeah, you're Jewish, right?
No, my great grandfather was a Spanish Jew, but that's about as far as it goes.
But so he didn't pass the religion to you as far as following
practice.
You know,
in fact,
Judaism.
He tried to hide it, because in those days they were equated, Spanish Jews were equated with gypsies and persecuted also. No.
Okay, all right. But you are quote unquote a Jewish man.
Only on one side
and
very far back, but no, I don't practice Judaism.
Okay, all right. All right, another thing I need to ask you on a few things you said earlier, all right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Do you believe in Satan?
No, unless you mean Al Pacino in a business suit at the top of a...
No, I'm not joking here. I'm saying... Because
well,
I'm
only half joking there, because I believe
okay,
that
Satan what I'm is, asking you is because there's many gods that's being worshipped here. You said you deal with polytheism.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm asking you is, do you believe that there's a bad spirit out there that's over bad spirits?
No, only in the hearts of humans who have divided their mind from their heart.
Okay.
It's we believe that Satan is a Christian and Muslim deity or being, but he's not. And we also see that many of the in particular, one of the main gods that have been worshipped by pagans since time immemorial is the horn god, who's associated with nature and you know, with like you see him in Minoan art and ancient Hindu
you mean
art.
Like
so,
God Pan?
Pan,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Pan, Dionysus.
So,
yeah. And
so that's the equivalent. Is Pan the equivalent of the Bible Satan?
Well, not really, but the Christians, because the worship of Pan was so popular, they attached Satan, their concept of Satan, to it. So it's kind of like saying, you know, because you're in favor of universal health care, you're a communist. You know, they just kind of started tarring people with that and persecuting them for worshiping that god, which they called Satan, because they considered him a rival with their one god.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this, because it's well established already that you believe in spirits.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So you believe in spirits. You pray to spirits. You pray to gods.
Well, we pray
but,
to gods and
yeah,
sometimes interact.
What is the origin? What is the origin of the gods you pray to? Where did they come from? What is the origin?
Well, that's a good mystery. I mean, the like I said earlier, Wiccans don't have any problem with science. Except in one respect, you know, when scientists claim there's no such thing as spirit, we beg to differ. But as far as, like, for instance, the origin of the universe being in a big bang 13.7 billion years ago, we don't have a problem with that. And if that's where everything comes from in this particular cycle, then maybe, just maybe, that's where the gods come from too.
No, but what I'm asking you is, so the answer is no. You don't know the origin of the God that you're praying to. That's
well,
correct.
If you mean the ultimate origin, I think that it's extremely arrogant of any human to claim, and I don't mean any offense to anyone out there or to you.
Well,
but,
no, just speak candidly. You
well,
know,
I don't.
Right?
I think it's extremely arrogant of any of us humans to claim to know the origin of the gods. Or to know even what the great, what the one is, you know, the one that is the source of all.
It may be, but I'm just asking you as far as you're concerned. We're talking about paganism right now. I'm just asking you.
We find that
most pagans don't know the origin of their gods that they follow.
Well, we find
that
it's more important to focus on our relationship with them and what they do for us, what we do with them, and it's surprisingly, I know people have this notion, this whole Hollywood notion of, you know, pagans signing pacts with demonic spirits in order to get rich, you know, but it's absolutely nothing.
The reason I'm asking you, and that's why I asked you the question, a few more questions I have to ask you based on what you said earlier.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't know for sure the origin of the gods you follow, how can you say for sure Satan is not one of them?
Well, how can you say for sure what the origin of Satan is? I mean,
so let's leave it open then.
Was written by God, but how do you know that for sure? Well, you have
faith,
right?
I can answer that question for you. I can answer that question for you, but I want to just talk about paganism, the fact that if you don't know the origin, it's a possibility that one of those gods could be Satan.
I've never encountered any deity that even comes close to Satan. I have encountered a lot of people.
Let's talk about the enlightened one.
Pretty
that's
evil, but
let's talk about the enlightened one, the one that brings the enlightenment.
Well, we don't necessarily think there's just one. We think that there's enlightenment to be found through many channels and through many people, and that's part of the problem we see with monotheism is that it always claims there's only one, and that promotes the idea that there's a guru who will teach you everything, who's perfect, the idea that there's a prophet who's the only prophet that had the truth, and anybody who disagrees with him needs to have his head cut off, you know, kind of like the Islamists.
Okay, all right. Let's make this clear, though.
Uh-huh.
All right. Just so we can go to the next one, because I don't want to stay on this forever. I just want to speak to you about it, because I've asked people these questions. Let's go to the next one here. All right?
Sure. Okay.
Okay, because you were talking about the horn god, which is a man god.
Well,
which is your main god. He's your main god, the horn god, correct?
He's one of them, yeah. Most witches would say yes. They're he and the goddess, which they might call the great goddess or the great mother, that these are their two main deities, and that's certainly true for our coven and in our personal experience, too.
Okay. Another question I have. Would you relate better, will some other cultures relate these same gods to what the Roman Catholic Church can call Jesus and Mary today?
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Absolutely, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because they do tend to have that kind of a balance between them. You know, one of them being kind of a bringer of change, of death of the old way and birth of the new way, and the other being very compassionate and loving and nurturing and you know, and kind of like a father and a mother, yeah, like the ideal father and mother.
And I'm saying this is because I was reading this story called The Two Babylons.
Uh-huh.
And the Roman nuns were perplexed when they went to certain polytheism countries who have never heard of Christianity. And when they went to the country, it was kind of a smooth transition with conversion, because the only thing they had to do was tell them that the name of your child and mother is the same as our Jesus and Mary. Like, it was almost the same story that they would discuss in Christianity.
Right.
But it
that,
was ancient,
that,
ancient pagan gods.
That goes both ways. You know, it means that Jesus and Mary are also the same as in that
okay.
sense.
Okay. Now, I'm going to put this out there strictly for the listeners and let people know that we're Hebrews, and we don't deal with Jesus and Mary. We deal with Yeshaya and Ahiah, and I'm going to go with the difference in that real quick. But I really want to talk about this encounter you had with the horn god Pan. His
let
name
me,
is Pan.
Let me draw one distinction, though, real quick, before we go off of that, is that we don't think of them as having been human. You know, in other words, Jesus and Mary were, according to the Bible, were humans before, at least, you know, even if sent by God, still human. And but we don't think of our, most of the time, I mean, not all cultures or not all gods are this way, but in that particular case, we don't equate them with human beings.
And okay. And the reason I'm asking you, Steve, and to show you that the same gods are synonymous with paganism is within Christianity. They just don't want to deal with the reality of it.
Well,
and,
I agree, but that doesn't mean they're bad. It doesn't mean they're evil.
Yeah, well,
it just means people need to broaden and open up their hearts and minds a little more and accept that truth flows through many, many channels. Not all channels,
I
agree.
I guess that comes from the perception of what one would perceive as good or bad. But let me ask you this question, because I really want to hit this point, because
yeah.
I want to run down, and then I'm going to fade off and let you finish talking. You said you had an experience with the horn god.
One in particular, and more, yeah, but one that made the most impression on me, I'd say, yes.
I'm saying, did you have a personal experience? Did you see this horn god? Was it a spiritual?
Yes.
You seen him?
Yes, yes, definitely. There's,
okay,
yeah,
so did you
no
do
question.
Some type of ritual, some type of spell to conjure him?
It was in a ritual specifically to a traditional ritual, specifically to call him down. And he very much came, and he was a most impressive being, great dignity and great age, and he was. He took the form of what I can only call dark light. In other words, like a kind of light that is just not light. You know, almost. I don't know if this is what the physicists mean by dark energy, but it's like that. And
sort of like the biblical Lucifer.
No.
Okay.
Even though a lot of traditional witches used to use that name. For him, that was just.
Oh, okay.
Nothing like anything I've ever seen in the book.
There's another question I have for you. While you're there, excuse me, because I'm gonna let you go. But let me. The deity, in the spirit of Yahweh.
Mm-hmm.
There's a book that came to my attention about 6 years ago called The Witch's God. And Yahweh was one of the gods being worshipped or conjured or spoken of in spells under the Wiccans. And I was surprised to see that. Are you familiar with that? The YHWH?
Yeah, I believe I know that book. That was their particular tradition. But I will say this, that the name Yahweh, it does come from a... what we call in the Goodly Spellbook the vowel spectrum. If you look at all languages, all, you know, just the structure of the human mouth. And I learned this in college at Princeton as a student of music. And you were to pronounce all those vowels in order from the highest to the lowest. It would be, pardon me, this is going to sound strange, but it would be. Yeah, oh, you know, you can hear in that E-A-A-O-U or E-A-A-O-U. It's kind of the beginning, middle, and end of that. And a lot of, most of the scholars that study the name, have studied the name Yahweh, point out that in its very earliest form, that's generally what it was represented as, including in the ancient world, is E-A-A-O-U.
But doing my research, I found out that the word Yahweh actually have pagan origin.
Well, it is pagan, and it's an attempt. It's also Hebrew, and it's an attempt to capture the uncapturable.
Hebrew.
You know, to say this is the all. As best we can express it is by saying all the vowels. You know, I mean, how else can you say the name of something that's infinite except to try to say, you know,
the basics of all language? So YHWH is an infinite God.
Well, it's originally. Well, in Greek, it would be Yoda, I-A-U, is basically probably how you'd best spell it, the way they used to spell it in ancient Greek. But it's, that's the Yod-Heh-Vo-Heh, that's actually the origin of that, the H.
Okay, because I'm going. And I actually put that out there with the knowledge of the origin of the word. And
yeah,
I wanted
to be
able to express that real quick.
Not just name. You also find it in deity, Diu, D-A-A-O-U, Deus, Jupiter.
Okay, go ahead.
Jupiter, you know, that name appears in all over the world, even in Chinese name for the supreme deity, the emperor, I think it was the one who first brought arts and crafts to human beings, you know. So you find it universally as a name for the universal deity, or the universal spirit behind all deities, I'd say. So even if people are using it nowadays in kind of a, you know, I don't want to say bastardized form, but, you know, kind of a partial form as Yahweh, the name of this particular deity we worship. That's really the origin, I think, was mystics trying to capture this allness, you know, the oneness of all, by saying, you know, Yahweh, and that's the best any human can do.
Okay. Well, I wanted to put this out there because we did the research on the Masoretes. I don't know if you're familiar with the Masoretes around the first century.
I've heard of that, but I don't know much about it.
Masoretes? Yeah, the Masoretes were, during the first century, what happened? Well, well before 1000 AD. I would say well after that, around during the Dark Ages, right before the Dark Ages, during the time of the Crusades, around the 10th century, you had a conversion of the Khazars into Judaism, which are the modern-day Jewish people today. But what they did was they put their hands on the ancient text, and they, to control, because there's power through invocation, they made sure they would pull the true name of God out of the records to hide it from the Hebrews and injected the highest, what they would call universal supreme being, a bear god. And we did some Hebrew study, and we found that Yah means God or power. It don't denote a good or bad god or what god or how many gods. Yah just means God.
That's
and
about
Hova,
right, yeah.
Hawa goes into the word in the Hebrew, mischief, falling.
Huh.
So,
okay,
so the Yahweh actually...
Hawa?
Yeah.
Huh.
Hava. Hava means ruin, fallen, mischief. So it's the god of the fallen, the god of mischief. So,
have you heard of the Gnostic god Yaldabaoth?
Yes.
Have you studied any about the ancient Gnostics and what they believed?
Yes.
Okay, so you know probably then, yeah, that's, they had a very similar belief that in fact the God that the Christians worship
exactly.
Was a trickster.
But the whole deal, I want to I want to put this out there. There is a God over all gods. There is a God. If there's many, you must know that it had to begin with one, and his name is Ahayah. I don't want to put that out there to the brothers and sisters. He's the God of the Hebrews. Ahayah is his name. The I am that I am always existed. All right. Now, one other thing I wanted to ask you here, because this is getting quite interesting.
I agree it is.
And some questions were sent to me, so some of these questions are not my questions. It's what others just want to know. All right?
Okay. Yeah.
One question, and I wouldn't ask this question, and I don't really care about this, but I'm just asking because it was sent to me to ask. Is there any what you will call sexual rituals within paganism?
Yes, there are. Pagans, well, Wiccans in particular, I can speak for, do believe that the sex and the body can be sacred and should be sacred. And there's a certain kind of energy that's raised during the sexual act that does play a role in some really certain.
Now, when I'm talking about this, what they're asking in particular is like when people see the movies Eyes Wide Shut,
where there were
these societies where there was orgies going on.
Yeah,
is orgies part of these sexual rituals?
Well, I'll be honest with you. Some of the old covens, yeah, they were. You know, you have to imagine these are very staid and proper English men and women that are in this very repressed Victorian society. So when they had a chance to cut loose, they cut loose.
That's nothing that you all are a part of.
That's not, no. In fact, we even discourage people from... let me put it this way. We don't want people to use our coven as a dating service.
Unlawful? Let me ask you this. Is it unlawful amongst Wiccans and pagans? Are there groups that do operate in those types of activities?
There may well be. I can't say that I know any personally, but, it certainly is. As long as everybody's treating one another with respect and care, and, then it's not lawful. However, we find it kind of impractical and imprudent because people tend to get a lot of things tied up with sex. You know, they think, well, are you still going to see me tomorrow? No, I've got to go back to my wife, you know. I mean, that's it's just too tangled, and it's just too... too much pain often comes out of that. So we, while we don't discourage the kind of sexual tension between opposites, and that is an important part of magic, we don't let people, date each other. Well, we discourage them from doing it. We say, if you're going to do it, please go somewhere else, join another coven.
Okay. So really, that's really a segue into one of my final questions with you here, brother. And that's, it leads me to my next question that I have to ask you. All right, because you said that, this is kind of wild, man. But anyway.
Okay, go for it.
Oh, okay. When you said that's one of the things that's within your magic or whatever, leading to magic here.
Oh yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you know we were going here.
Well, no, I'm glad you did, because I would have.
I'm going here because I need to ask you a question. Is it possible, or can it be done? Do pagans cast spells on people? I'm not asking you, are they supposed to? I'm not asking you about black or white magic. If a pagan wanted to, could they cast a spell against a person?
Yes, they could, and that's why we have a really strong tradition of ethics in the craft, in Wicca and witchcraft. And that's one thing where, in order to progress in almost all pagan religions and learn to use that kind of magic, that's why almost all cultures, including witches, pagan groups, require that you become a priest or priestess, so you be trained in how to use that properly and ethically and not use it to harm others. We have one principle that all witches agree on, and it's called the law of threefold return. And, I mean, different ones express it a different way, but that's usually what we call it. And it's basically, if you cast a curse on someone, be prepared for it to backfire on you. What you put out there is going to come around back to you sooner or later. You could call it karma. You could call it the golden rule. Do it to others as you would have them do unto you. But there's basically kind of a reciprocity that goes on that, you know, whereas if you bless someone, you know, expect that blessing to return also. So, yeah, we say that we do have the power to bless and to curse. But generally, I mean, people, I'll tell you, I'll be honest. As public witches, people are calling us all the time asking us to curse someone. And
that's a shame.
Yeah, well, you know, people sometimes have really, you know, righteous grievances against someone who's, you know, been cheating on them or, you know, maybe raped someone close to them, that sort of thing, you know. But what we really encourage them to do is to say, wait a minute, step back from that first impulse of wanting to hit back with the same thing you got hit with, you know. And there is magic you can do, but it may have to do with restraining that person from doing further harm. It may have to do with ensuring that justice comes to bear.
So what you're saying, there's laws in being witch, and being a witch or dealing with witchcraft. There's laws within that.
Yeah, there are really strong ethical principles that.
But someone
really
could take. Someone could with this knowledge. Someone could with this knowledge do some serious, deadly harm.
Not really. No. I mean, well, let me put it this way.
If you got to think about it, brother, that means someone can do some things.
Targeted by a curse one time. That's what made me pause. I remember I never knew where it came from, who put it on me, or I had a pretty good idea of why. But it came very close to killing me, and I had to do some serious magic to stop it.
It seems like a Harry Potter story here.
Well,
let me ask you this, because there's a few things I just have to bring, you know what I mean? And a couple of another question I had is UFOs.
Yes, okay.
UFO activity. What is a Wiccan or witch's take on the truth of UFOs, or what the government is not saying concerning unidentified flying objects? Is some of these gods that are being worshipped, or are they a part of some of these beings or these spacecrafts that be disappearing and appearing? What do a Wiccan say concerning UFOs?
Well, kind of the consensus is that no, they're not gods, because they won't come when you call them. Whereas gods usually do.
Seem like you got God popping up with some of your rituals, though. But you're talking about the UFOs here. Have you ever encountered?
It's hard to get an alien to show up when you want them to. but no, we do believe that there's life is so vast and so complex, but that we also tend to believe that any culture that's out there that's been around a lot longer and maybe a lot wiser than, you know, current human society is proving to be at the moment.
No, I just got a question to me. They just want to know if you ever experienced that. So let's get back to something we all can relate to now. Here we go.
Sure. I got a question.
Stick with me, Steve, here, because we're on a roll here.
Go right ahead.
Okay. The speaking in tongues in Christianity, I did some research on that and found that that goes back to some Roman rituals with the god Bacchus, who's the same as Dionysus.
Yeah.
So speaking in tongues in the Christian church, and when I look in the Bible, I see nothing of what they're doing in the church in the Bible, because when in Acts the second chapter, when the Holy Spirit came down,
mm-hmm.
it allowed those who didn't understand others' languages to understand them so the gospel of Christ can be taught. But babbling in an unknown tongue and opening yourself for channeling in spirits go back to the god Bacchus. And that's what I researched. You being a pagan, is that correct or incorrect?
That's probably right, yeah, because their whole thing was with the, in those days, that the worship of Bacchus was to reach a state of ecstasy where you were directly channeling the spirit of the god. And, yeah, I'm sure a lot of people did start, you know, babbling in strange tongues. Honestly, if you read, like, in our Goodly Spell book, we put a lot of very
I'm
old...
not going to reach that. Go ahead.
Okay. It's called, yeah, I'll just repeat it. It's called the Goodly Spell book, Old Spells for Modern Problems by... And as you probably find it under the name Dixie Dearman, author name, D-E-E-R-M-A-N.
No, but go ahead. I need to hear what you have to say on this.
Well, we have some very old, in fact, we looked for the oldest spells we could find from Roman and pre-Roman period, and quite a lot of them are they're called barbarous words of power, which means they're very ancient, such ancient languages that nobody knows really what they mean anymore. Let's see, here I got, let me read you this one, see if I can pull this off.
Come on, please, don't be reading no stuff like that. Don't be putting no stuff out there right now, brother. We're very spiritual
Kadabra.
People here. And it, no, I just rather
please,
you
that is an old spell
question.
Word.
I don't want you to put none of that. Please. It's going fine right now. I trust
healing
you.
Spell. Don't
I
worry. It was a healing
play.
Spell
say
for
that.
Removing a fever. People used to take off one letter from the end each time they said it until it finally ended with the word. Ah, like relief, you know. That way they'd bring down the fever of the sick person. So most of these old spells, that's what they were actually for, was for healing people and helping them with, you know, medical problems or various other kinds of problems.
Stuff.
But they're never, well, at least the ones we put in our book, none of them are curses or anything like that. So they're useful and helpful, but not dangerous. We wouldn't publish anything dangerous like that.
Okay, well, let me ask you this, because I wanted to make sure that part was placed out there, because there's a lot of, I'm coming to find, there's a lot of pagan rituals within Christianity itself. And the sheer ignorance within Christianity is perplexed. I'm perplexed with it. Is that to come down on everyone and say, well, my way is the only way, but really your way is paganism. And then you tell a pagan they're going to hell if they don't follow your way when you stole your way from pagans.
Yes, that's exactly what we say.
So I just wanted to put that out there. Now, let me ask you that, since we're going into the afterlife and things of that nature, when it comes to hell, which
mm-hmm.
they speak of. Do you believe there's an underworld? Do you believe that there's a hell, a place that exists after one leaves the earth?
Well, you know, we only have really one fixed belief, and it's based on our experience, and that's in reincarnation. Witches do believe in reincarnation, though we've had many lives.
Okay, you believe in reincarnation.
And so we believe that, well, we experience, actually. A lot of people, you know, like we listen to people who have died and come back to life, you know, like on the operating room table and so forth. And they'll often talk about going to, well, in fact, my own high priestess and wife, Lady Passion, that happened to her when her daughter was born. She died and found herself in a... silver as a silver sphere with a whole bunch of other silver spheres, just shooting towards out past the planets, out towards a place that was incredibly beautiful. It looked like, she says, I know this sounds corny, but it looked like Superman's city of crystals, you know, and it was that way above, and beneath it, it seemed like there was a utterly dark reflection of it, you know, of it. I was going towards that upper light part, you know, with all these other silver spheres, but this, she says that this knowledge came to me, and that kind of how the whole universe worked, you know, it was all this whole idea basically of polarity and balance and duality. And as soon as she thought other people should know this, I wish other people knew about this, she says they, and she had a distinct feeling of it being they, you know, gods, sent her right back, and she found herself right back in her body, right, you know, where she had just bled to death a moment earlier. And ever since then, she's been a very different person, she feels, you know, much less afraid of death, because she knows.
Well, let me ask, because I don't think the question, maybe I need to just ask it in a different way, because I can actually go into the scriptures and show you what she experienced, because what she experienced is actually in the 70 scriptures that were hid in the Qumran caves from the prophet Esdras.
Well, it's also
prophet.
In Plato. I mean, Plato writes about that
okay.
in the in one of his, Timaeus, I think it is. And I'm
okay.
actually a big follower of Plato and Socrates as pagan
yeah,
philosophers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They were two known pagans.
Well, they were, and they and this the thing that she experienced is written there and described as the experience of a soldier who died and came back to life.
Let me just real quick. I want to make a quick announcement. Everyone, you tune into the Search Engine International. I'm your host, Gaja. We have Elder Rakar live here. We also have Steve. I'm sorry, I forgot your surname. But Steve
Rasmussen.
Okay. Repeat that, please.
Steve Rasmussen.
Rasmussen. And Steve Rasmussen is a pagan, or from the religion, witchcraft.
Witchcraft, Wicca, yeah. Both. Yeah, you can call it either, really.
Okay, all right. And okay. For the listeners who are there tuning online, we have an hour and 30 minutes to go before the overtime. Now, we had some problems last week. Those of you who are trying to get into the Skype, what you need to do is click on the live link for the show, and you'll see the Skype link to call in. All right, you can try and start doing it from now so that when it comes down to the time, you don't get cut off. We have an hour and 20 minutes to go. Excuse me. An hour and 29 minutes to go for the overtime. All right. And that's it. Pleasant listening. I'll hand it back over to Elder Rakar and Steve.
Okay. So.
Yeah, you had another question?
Yeah. The question I asked is, so you don't know for sure whether or not there's a hell, or you don't know about that. Because the reason I'm asking you is because when someone dies, according to Scripture, they behold the light. They go through everything you've just experienced. It's a seven-day period before they go into place of habitations where they'll be based on the judgment of their life. But originally, you adorn that light. You deal with the 7 days. You understand, but I'm asking you, do you know anything, or is the teaching of hell or torment after life, is that anything within your religion specifically, is what I'm asking you?
Not in the Christian way, no, we don't have that teaching, and we honestly haven't. You know, we rely a lot on experience, what people's experiences are, as opposed to what we're told or what a book tells us. And I haven't known of anybody who's encountered anyone who's gone to a hell or experienced or seen it. However, that's not to say that people don't experience that when they die. They might very well. You know, I think that a lot of people, one thing we do deal a lot with, let me tell you this, is ghosts, angry ghosts, spirits of people who may have died very angry, you know, and were very, maybe very bad people in their life, and they're caught in a kind of hell a lot of times, not always, but a lot of times. So, you know, people will call us in to try to get rid of a ghost that's destroying things in their house or, you know, really causing a lot of trouble, and quite often that's the problem, and they're suffering, they're tormented by whatever
okay.
it is got them.
Okay, well, answering the question directly, no, y'all don't deal with the hell. Let me ask you this.
We talk about the hell of the Christians, but it's kind of
okay.
A
all right.
May you go to the hell of the Christians. It's a joke, really.
Listen. Let's go into the symbolisms now.
There's
certain symbols that's used, like the Jewish star, the six, you know, what they call the Star of David, which could be called the Seal of Solomon.
Right.
Which is
a
six-pointed star.
Now, that is a very ancient symbol that represents as above, so below. It's the two interlaced triangles. One of them's pointing up, the other one's pointing down.
Yeah. It's what the Jewish people are hiding, and they call them the Star of David, but it's not the Star of David at all. Is that correct?
You're right. It's much older than that, yeah, and much more universal. And it means
And its history is shrouded within paganism. It's the origin, not shrouded, but its origin is paganism.
Yeah,
and really the six-pointed star have nothing to do with the Star of David. Am I correct in that?
You're right. It was not adopted by most Jews until the Middle Ages. In ancient times, like the old carvings that you find on Roman ruins, Judaism was always represented by the the seven or nine branched candelabra, the Hanukkah candelabra. That was the symbol for Judaism then. I forget what the name of that is. You know, it's that holds the candlesticks. The menorah.
But under Megan David, it was switched under the Rothschilds. Symbolisms under the Rothschilds to. It's called an Enochian magic. It's called the Seal of Solomon, and this is magic that was used under some of the Kabbalists.
Yes, it does play a role in that. Yeah, and that is probably how it came into Judaism. Yeah, it was from the Kabbalah, because it is a magical symbol. It represents what nowadays mathematicians call the fractals. You know, the idea that everything on high is reflected on low, you know, that you find the same laws, same structures, same whatever, whether you're dealing with the very large level like universes or the very small level like atoms. And so they call that, in magic, we call that the principle of as above, so below. It's called the Hermetic.
I'm asking you this, sir, because I knew other Hebrews who ignorantly picks up the symbol and don't even know what the symbol is about. They think there's some type of cultural connection with the ancient Hebrews and this six-pointed star.
You understand? Well, you're right. It's become like kind of an arbitrary logo, you know, like everything's a logo nowadays. So that's the logo for Judaism, just like...
So I want to put this out there for all the brothers out there who are ignorantly. If you're going to follow something, find out the origin of it instead of just saying, "Well, this was something of my father's."
I agree with that. Yeah, you should really understand the origin and the deeper meaning of things. You know, because a symbol isn't just an arbitrary bit of geometry. You know, it reflects some kind of universal principle, depending on the symbol. And
use not only the six-pointed star, but you use the five-pointed star, what we call the Baphomet also. Is that correct?
We don't associate it with Baphomet, but, yeah, we do use the five-pointed star. It's an interlaced five-pointed star, and we usually surround it with a circle. And it has a lot of meanings. In fact, you go to our website, I've got a whole huge page about the meaning of the pentagram at oldandwild.org. That's old and wild with an E on the end.
Is there any fire attributed to this type?
I'm sorry.
I said, when you're using a five-pointed star, is there any level of fire as a part of this particular ritual?
Yeah, there, well, the it represents, to us, it represents the four elements plus spirit. So the four elements are fire, air, water, earth, and then the kind of the central core element that gives rise to all the others is spirit, the one that animates them, gives them life.
I have a better question. Uh-huh. Is a Christian, just say a normal Christian or regular person who watch TV, whatever the case is, if they were to happen onto one of these rituals with a five-pointed star with fire, would they assume that you are dealing with some level of satanic worship?
Well, they can and do. They because they've seen all those darn Hollywood movies, you know. We've had a lot of trouble with that over the years. You know, people make wild assumptions, and so they'll call in the police, and you know, we'll say, hey, you know, we've got a religious ritual going on here. Don't you know? Sometimes we have to, like with our big public ritual. Every year we do a big public ritual in downtown Asheville, and we're doing it again this year on October 31st, and for Halloween or Samhain. And we, you know, a lot of times we get protesters from the Baptist churches coming and shouting, you know, thou shalt not suffer a witch to live, and all kinds of that sort of thing. And we have to, sometimes the police have had to hold them back, you know.
I'm a firm believer in the grace and the mercy and forgiveness of Christ. So I don't understand how a Christian could come out and tell a pagan that the Bible says suffer not a witch to live when they stole their religion from pagans and they don't follow the laws in the Bible themselves.
With hypocrisy, in my opinion.
Yeah. If you're not following the laws in the Bible, how can you... You're telling your people when the Bible says don't eat pork, shrimp, crab, or lobster, when the Bible says remember the Sabbath and you worship it on a Sunday, when the Bible tell you that you're not supposed to follow the ways of the Gentiles, but yet you're following the same pagan religions, Christmas and Easter. So how can you now tell a pagan that they're worshiping Satan when are you worshiping Satan then? If you were dealing with the same paganism as a pagan and you equating that to Satanism, now, are you saying that you're following Satan? So what you need to do, what you would need to do is make a sign and show these Christians the similarity between paganism and Christianity.
They're blind to that. The people that do this are so tightly wound, they're almost schizophrenic. And they tend to be very, I don't know how much, you know, where you are, you experience this, but here in the South, there's some strands of fundamentalist Christianity that are just absolutely aggressive and, you know, they want to, they're literally just like the suicide bombers in the Islamic countries, you know,
I want to make this point real quick before it eludes me.
Okay.
Real quick, I need to make this point before it eludes me. The whole deal is I don't agree with your religion. I'll tell you that right now. I'll be straight with you. Christ says, be the hot or cold, because if you're lukewarm, you're spewed out of the mouth. At least you're following your religion, and that's what you're going to follow, and that's your road you chose.
Yeah.
And you have a chance, once you see a greater light, if you see the truth, to repent, if you find that it's wrong, to take the right road. That's different than a Christian who stole your religion telling you you're going to go to hell.
I totally agree. if you're going to choose that path, choose it with integrity, practice it with integrity, you know, and don't.
Exactly.
Yeah,
that's
and I think
warm.
I totally agree with you about
that. So this is what I'm saying. You should help them by bringing out a sign and say, listen, here's paganism, and here's the same thing that you do that we do. So at least it gives them the choice to look in the mirror and say, you know what, let me really go into this Bible. Let me go into this and see what I'm really dealing with. Because if they might as well join the pagan church, is what I'm saying. And that's the point I was trying to make with the pastor last week, pointing his finger, saying right or wrong. And I'm like, listen, brother, you don't understand. You can make an excuse for why you do Sunday worship. You can say that it's about Jesus, but Jesus wasn't born on December 25th. That's Saturnalia.
Yeah.
You can talk about Christ rising on a Sunday. He didn't rise on a Sunday. When they went on the first day, Christ was already gone. He rose on a Sabbath. You're worshiping Sunday because of the integration with Constantine, integrating pagan beliefs with the new religion, Christianity, for worldwide acceptance.
He was a known
mm-hmm. pagan. So
As a pagan, I'll confirm that.
Wait. Huh?
As a pagan, I agree with that, yeah.
Yeah, you can confirm that. So don't come try to tell people this is the way when your way was created out of paganism. Now, I believe the Bible is the way. I believe that the truth is the way. But Christ told us in Matthew 24 that many shall come in my name saying I am Christ and shall deceive many. All right? So some of the greatest deception will come through Christianity. Look at all the death, destruction, mayhem, and hell this world have experienced in the name of Christianity.
Well, yeah, that's because people are so certain they've got the one and only answer to everything that they are willing to kill for it, you know, just to prove
Steve. Steve, I don't agree with your religion. I'll tell you that wholeheartedly. I don't agree with what you believe. I don't. But you know what? I have more respect for you than a Christian, because at least you know what you're dealing with. And Christ says, either be hot or cold or spewed out. I don't agree with it at all. I believe that if you don't change that it's going to be a bad deal for you at the end of the day.
Well, that's why we've been working really hard to, to educate people about paganism and Wicca. And we have a huge website at this point. It's, with tons of information about that. And we're putting together a correspondence course that anyone can take and learn and study from. And
I'm not here to help you spread.
Let me jump in real quick on something. Go ahead. You spoke about earlier about the star in Judaism, right? How about the moon and stars in Islam? Is that also pagan?
There's a lot of evidence that it comes from Byzantium. Yeah, that originally that was the symbol of Byzantium, and it was associated with Hecate, the goddess, same goddess that our coven worships, Hecate, because the story goes that, Byzantium, that's, of course, the origin, that's Constantinople, which became Istanbul, and then became the capital of the Islamic world for a while, around 500 years ago, under the Ottoman Empire. But, yeah, where that started was, as a symbol of Hecate, it was a night when only a star and the sliver of the moon were out. And well, actually, the star was Venus. That star represents Venus. And Philip, the father of Alexander of Alexander the Great, Philip of Macedon, his father, came and tried to conquer the Byzantines at night. His soldiers were creeping up. And the Byzantines say there was a great flash of light, and the dogs started barking. Nobody knew where the light came from, but it revealed the Philip's troops sneaking up on them, and they were able to repel the attack. And ever since that day, they had Hecate as their patron goddess, and her symbol, they used that moon and star as her symbol. We still use it, by the way, which is...
Well, you know what, man? That story that you just told me just then, sounds like the American anthem.
Sounds like what?
It sounds like the American anthem.
The American answer?
The anthem. The national
anthem. The American anthem.
Oh, yeah, which started as a drinking song, yeah. To Anacreon in heaven, yeah. Yeah, who's a pagan god, you're absolutely right. Yeah, it started out as a god, as a...
So,
I have a good question for you now. It just popped out at me, and I think this will be a profound answer. That whatever you want to come with will be profound. I know the question. If Islam is founded in polytheism, because we know before Muhammad they had one God for each day of the year, which was under Persian mythology, which is paganism.
Yeah, that's right. In the Kaaba, yeah, they had 360 idols.
So
yeah.
Here's my question. If Islam was founded in paganism and the modern-day Christianity was founded in paganism, why is it that you think they both try to hide their pagan origin? Why?
I call it reaction formation. They're so afraid of that that they're viciously anti-pagan. You know, Muhammad is an example of that. You remember you heard about like 10 or 15, maybe longer ago, years ago, that novel, The Satanic Verses. Well, that author who, you know, the Ayatollah issued a fatwa against, and Salman Rushdie, he took that title from some actual verses in the Quran that are called the Satanic Verses. And the story is, and this is, you ask Islamic scholars about this, and they'll tell you this story too, is that as Muhammad was reciting the, you know, the scripture that's in, he said, and Al-Uzza and Alat and Mananet, they are exalted as, and the word people think is cranes, flying across the sky, and they will, you can call on them for intercession. And they were the three goddesses that were, that the Kaaba was sacred to, and they were, they're like the maiden, mother, and crone that we call nowadays. One of them was like a young goddess representing, you know, virgin. The second was the great goddess, her name means the goddess. And Mananet was the goddess of fate, and like the fate that cut off the thread in Greek mythology. So, they heard that, the inhabitants of Mecca, who were pagans still, most of them, were overjoyed, and they fell down and prostrated themselves around the Kaaba and said, yay, finally we've got unity, you know, we don't have to keep fighting anymore. Well, then Muhammad had second thoughts and decided that, Satan must have put that thought in his head, and he changed it and said, basically, instead of the verse that says they are like great cranes flying across the sky and you can pray to them for intercession, he cut that out and said, you can't pray to them, basically. They're forbidden, you know. So, you know, he cut out the goddesses, Islam.
So why, my question is, why do they, especially the hierarchy, they have to know what they're dealing with. And I'm talking about, I'm looking at some of the hidden Wiccans, some of the hidden witches and warlocks who are not open as pagans, like your Masons today, who deal with the same symbology, they deal with spells.
Yeah, closely related. They are very close to us. Yeah, we're really come from the same source. Yeah.
Same source. They tell you that you must be from one of the original religions to be a Mason, because why? They know the original religion, the origin of all these religions, go back to ancient paganism.
Well, let me correct you there. They say that they're open to any religion. You bring your sacred book and put it on the altar. They worship God as a universal one. You know, they say that people can belong to any religion and still be a Mason.
Yes. Yes, because really all religions have the same origin. The whole world religion has the same origin.
Really, I believe it does. It's nature.
So my,
you know,
maybe I didn't hear the answer, but I really need to hear the answer.
Yes.
Why are they afraid to say that my religion started with paganism?
Because then they'd have to give up control. As soon as you say there's only one way, and I've got that way, then you're in control. It's just like being king, you know. There's only one king in this country, and I'm him. You know, anybody else says they're king, I'm going to go out and kill him. And that way you can, you know, and it's also, I got to say, I think it's a masculine thing, too. It's a way of shutting out priestesses and women, and they're extremely powerful. I mean, you may or may not agree with this, but 9 times out of 10, I think women tend to be more spiritual in their naturally spiritual than men. And you can see in the history of Islam and Christianity how terribly afraid they were of that and how they took great pains to deny that Jesus had a wife, you know, like that manuscript that's just been discovered says, or to deny that these goddesses were part of Islam. So anyway, that's just my theory, but I think you'll find a lot of agreement with that.
All right. So in a nutshell, if they're going to say that, if they believe wholeheartedly that paganism is and Satanism is one and the same, so they're in denial because if they admitted their similarities, they would have to admit that according to their belief, they're actually worshiping Satan themselves.
Well, you know, yes, I agree with that. I think that is who they are.
Right?
The thing is, their own Satan. Yeah, I honestly have come to believe that, and I'm not original in that. That's what the Gnostics believe. And, you know, I think they created this idol, and now they worship it. I mean, not all of them, you know, but the people that are out there, you know, suicide bombing and out there burning crosses on black people's lawns, you know, that those people are actually, I think they're worshiping their own Satan, honestly.
Okay. I just got another question. You really have to give me some understanding on this. Is there any pagan similarities in the old rituals of the KKK?
I don't know. I mean, they. My impression of the KKK is that they just grabbed.
I'm not talking about the hate part of that. I'm talking about their rituals.
They seem
the burning of the cross.
Yeah, I don't know where they got that from. Why would you burn your own sacred symbol? You know.
Well, they actually got that from Druid belief from ancient Europe. Exactly. It was a Druid. It's a Druid worship from the Celts.
Oh, a burning cross.
All right.
Well, I know that at the solstice they might have done something like that as a sun symbol.
Yeah, the sun symbol. Yeah.
In ancient Germanic cultures, they used to. Yeah, they would light a wheel on fire and roll it down a hill as a symbol of the sun. But that's not quite the same. So
well,
I don't know. Yeah. I didn't know
right.
that.
I got a few of them. I got a next one, Steve. I hope I'm not bombarding you here. I got another one.
I don't mind at all.
What are pagans' idea or understanding of, or what are your feelings of European colonization? Of how the North American Indians were destroyed, and then it opened the door for pagans and others to worship a religion on stolen land. That's a good question there.
Well, given that the Native Americans were pagan themselves, and many of them were forced to give up their beliefs in mission schools, yeah, I think it's this mentality again that, it's two things. One of them is that mentality that I call monopoly monotheism, but, you know, where there's only one way and it's my way. But I think the other thing, too, is that there's another mentality, too, where people are kind of caught. These two mentalities are kind of at war in the world, I think. And the other one is, I call it money-worshipping materialism, you know, where all that matters is getting rich and everything around you, you only see it as a means to an end. You just see that. You don't see that mountain as sacred. You know, you see it as just something that's got gold in it, and you're going to dig it up and go get rich off of it. And it's you see that that's kind of prevalent in America today, that you know, it's the Wall Street mentality, and that's that was prevalent among the colonists too. They just they didn't care who or what was in their way. They just wanted to grab those resources and you know, go back and build their mansions on that stolen wealth. It's and it comes from a kind of materialism where you see the world around you as just nothing but dead stuff that you can use to your own end. And you see people that way too. You see them as human resources to be exploited, you know. And I think that all religions are at war against that, even though some of them contribute to it.
Okay, so in a nutshell, you don't agree with the European conquest through greed. So
no, not at all. No, I think it was
because that question had nothing to do with paganism. Let me ask you this. Some of the movies, some of the spells that are being actually spoken, like on Harry Potter or these other movies, are those actual spells? Are those actual things that are written in ancient pagan books?
Some of them are, yeah. Like there's a character in Harry Potter called Rubius.
Okay.
That's from a geomantic figure, a divination figure called Rubius, which means the red-headed one. It's very similar to Ifa, by the way, that divination system. It's called geomancy. The spells that they say, like, you know, tormentum invisibilium or that sort of thing, they're not real spells. They're kind of modeled on spells, you know, because a lot of they're not. None of them are actual spells.
Hey John, Steve, sorry, excuse me. Let me ask something on that, on the Harry Potter. Would you say the author of Harry Potter, would she be a witch?
I wish. No, I think she just read a lot of books and cribbed a lot of things. No, I think if she were a witch, she'd be sharing a little more of those royalties with other witches.
Okay, so you don't think she's from any Wiccan order? Because when I was looking into the Harry Potter movie, I found a lot of that, like, for example, the second movie, when they have the basilisk snake in it. I know that's a snake that's reverent in witchcraft. Is it not?
There's a lot of... It depends, yeah. I mean, the serpent is a really symbolic creature in so many religions. Yeah, it has a lot of meaning. So you can pretty much pull from any source for that, yeah. But, I think... If she is a witch, then she's been absolutely secret about it. Not even other witches that we know have had any contact with her in that way. And I honestly think that, you know, just like the Hollywood writers, you can get all of this stuff just by reading enough books and putting it together and getting, you know, she's very good at taking things that are real and kind of cobbling them together.
Okay.
Let me ask him this real quick before you, and I'm gonna let you back in if you don't mind. Gotcha. Let me ask: homosexuality, lesbians and gay men, men doing things with each other. What is your take on that as a Wiccan? Is that allowed in Wiccan?
Well, let me put it this way: the every year at our big Samhain October 31st ritual that we do, the big public one, we have a different theme, and this year the theme is love is the law, and we're going to be holding a mass wedding and hand fasting for anyone of any sex and any couple or triple that wants to do it, and even though it will only be legal for the people that are heterosexual, we still want to say, you know, nature is much more diverse than just male coupling with female, and that's the real natural law is love, and that's the most important thing of all. So we're going to do that publicly in front of the courthouse as a kind of a ritual.
So you do welcome homosexual men and lesbians within this unit?
Most American witches do, but I got to be honest with you that traditional British witches, way back in the old days, maybe 100 years ago, did not. They were very much against it, and
gay people were not allowed
to be in a coven in those days. They had to be. They were considered very magical, but they were like they would be like messengers who would go between covens, come to visit one or the other. But that's nowadays most witches consider that prejudiced and bigoted, and so we're you know, we think that what's in the heart is more important than what hangs between your legs.
Okay, well, the issue we have with that is that I don't know any homosexual or lesbian that came in the earth through a homosexual or lesbian reprocreation. Like, they
well,
are
a
product.
Partnership
they are
is about
of love. They are a product of love as far as male and female. So I don't understand how that whole thing is, but maybe we'll have someone on next week to talk about that. But let me just ask you all out, because it's not being bigot. It's about being straight.
It's about focusing just on procreation. I mean, marriage and partnership is about a lot more than that. In fact, we think more people ought to adopt children and having
them. That's an intricate part of it. Because if everyone decided to do that, that would be the end of life itself.
Well, we got a long ways to go with that. We got like 7 billion people or more and counting on this planet, and there's they're procreating a little.
Listen, I won't deal with that with none of my children. But let's go here. Let's go here real quick. And let's be straight.
Hello, Bella. Can I just take an announcement real quick? We're down to the we're under 1 hour for normal time. We're gonna go into the overtime in about approximately 55 minutes. For the listeners there who are listening via the internet, now'd be a good time to try and call in. So the show, the number is 646-200-4309. And for the listeners on Skype throughout the UK, Jamaica, and parts of the Middle East, into Africa, that'd be a good time to try and start calling in via the Skype route also. That's it. You're locked into the Search Engine International. I'm your host, Brother Gaja. We have Elder Rakar on the phone, and we have Steve Rasmuffin.
There you go.
I got it. All right. All right, then. Let me hand it back over to you guys, okay?
Yeah. I wanted to say this also, that for those who listen, I mean, this has been one of the most interesting conversations we've had on air. I mean, besides the rabbi that came on one time, and I mean, that was just profound in itself. But it's interesting that we have a pagan on that's saying that came with absolute truth concerning his religion. And one thing that was brought out today, and I'm glad he brought it out, is that the majority of Christianity we have today is really hidden paganism. We've been mentioning this for a long time. They want to tell people, go to hell, our way is our way, and this, that, and the other. When really, the Sunday worship, Christmas, Easter, even the virgin birth. Is there a virgin birth in paganism, sir?
In ancient paganism, yeah. There were several deities that were, I'm trying to remember the exact source of that. But, yeah, that's in either Greek or Roman paganism, I forget.
Yeah, Horus and Osiris.
Yeah, maybe that's what
Horus
I'm thinking of, yeah.
Horus, Osiris, in ancient Egypt, you had Tammuz, the virgin child of Babylon.
That's right, yeah. Yeah.
And that was
that's
well
absolutely
before
right.
Christ.
Yeah, it's all that's taken from older myths, older pagan myths.
If you don't mind, let me read one thing out of the Bible that I don't think Christians even knew that was in the Bible. In Jeremiah 44, when the Hebrews began to worship the Gentile deities, the pagan deities, it was written, the prophet Jeremiah wrote this about to them. It says, Jeremiah 44, and I'm going to put this out there for everyone. It says, let me start here. I'm going to go a few verses up. As for the word that thou hast spoken unto the name of the Lord, we will not hearken unto thee. That's what the people began to do. It says, then all the men who knew that their wives had burned incense to other gods, And all the women that stood by, a great multitude, even all the people that dwelt in the land of Egypt and Patros, answered Jeremiah, saying, as for the word that thou hast spoken unto us in the name of the Lord, we will not hearken unto thee. But we will certainly do whatsoever thing goeth forth out of our own mouth, to burn incense unto the Queen of Heaven.
Ah, the Queen of Heaven.
Yeah, you know her, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Queen of Heaven.
Yeah.
And to pour out drink offerings unto her, as we have. But we will certainly do so whatsoever goeth forth out of our own mouth. Listen to this clearly. Goeth forth out of our own mouth to burn incense to the Queen Mother of Heaven, and to pour out drink offerings unto her, as we have done. We and our fathers, our kings and our princes in the cities of Judah and in the streets of Jerusalem. For then had we plenty of victuals and were well and saw no evil. But since we left off to burn incense to the Queen of Heaven and to pour out drink offerings unto her, we have wanted all things. And have been consumed by the sword and by the famine. And when we burn incense to the Queen of Heaven and pour out drink offerings unto her, did we make her cakes to worship her and pour out drink offerings unto her without our men? Now, I'm saying this because here's some examples in Scripture showing that the Hebrews were punished for dealing with the Queen Mother of Heaven, pouring out the drink doing the wine ritual, like you was mentioning. A lot of people don't know that the birthday cake, blowing out a candle on a birthday cake, is ancient paganism.
It could be, yeah. I've often wondered about that.
Yeah, in ancient Rome, they got it from Greek. Matter of fact, it started in ancient Babylon. Greeks picked it up, and then the Romans picked it up, where you would have once a year. You would have to bake a cake to the goddess Diana, which is your Statue of Liberty Day, ironically.
Yeah,
and
I have a web page on that, too, on oldandwild.org.
Yeah,
Artemis,
yeah.
Really is what she
yeah,
is.
And
not Artemis,
do,
I mean Athena, rather. Is
Athena, yes.
Yeah.
She was the hunter goddess.
Diana,
and
yeah,
they would
the goddess
have,
of the moon. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
they would
the
have
moon was her bow. I mean, you know, that's the symbol of the crescent moon. It's like
the
a bow.
The moon is her bow, exactly.
Yeah.
So they would put a cake in front of her, and if they didn't light a candle and make a wish, they said that the gods would haunt you for a year. Like bad spirits would ride you for a year. So each year they would have to bring a cake before the temple, before her feet, and make a cake to the goddess and blow out the candle. That's where the rich, I mean, your everyday practices, even in blowing out the candle. Honeymoon, even the word honeymoon is an ancient pagan ritual. I mean.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. I just looked that up the other day and
I forgot
what I read about it.
Well,
yeah, there are a lot of pagan rituals around that, which we're going to be try to incorporate some of that this Halloween. You know?
Yeah.
What
I'm saying is, before I got with you today, because I knew you was coming on, I just did some research I had in the past. Another thing I did, right now I'm traveling abroad, Steve, but in America I did a research of all the so-called holidays in America. Wouldn't you know that every holiday, even Martin Luther King's Day, falls on an ancient pagan Roman day?
Well, the thing is, they had holidays practically every day of the year, depending on the deity, so you could pretty much throw a dart at it and hit a Roman pagan holiday. That's part of the thing about having so many gods and goddesses is that there's a lot of sacred days you got to celebrate.
Well, exactly. Well, I'm going to ask you some questions based on the list I have in front of me.
The Queen of Heaven thing is interesting. I would like to make a point about that.
Go ahead.
Originally, the Hebrews believe that, like most pagan peoples, that you know, who had one god, that god had a wife, or who had a supreme god, that the supreme god had a wife. You know, like Jupiter had Juno, Zeus had Hera. Well, Yahweh, many believe, had Astarte, who is related to Ashtaroth, Isis, Venus. You know, they're all kind of very similar deity, and well, they are all basically the same goddess, and associated with Venus, the morning star. But anyway, yeah, they used to erect a pillar to her, which was kind of represented the tree of the world, you know. And but yeah, the
That's where the Christmas tree come in at.
Well, maybe, yeah, it is related to that.
Yeah.
World tree.
Yeah, my
sort of a Norse thing probably, but yeah, that same symbolism that it represents the axis of the world, the thing that everything spins around. You know,
you better not tell a Christian that. They love their Christmas trees.
Yeah, well, we love them too. We pagans, so we think it's one of the best parts of Christmas is bringing the greenery into the house to represent eternal life. You know, life within the darkness and the cold. You know, and that's what it symbolizes: the fact that life goes on no matter how hard, how cold, how dark things get. You know, here are these trees that in the middle of all that are still green, you know, and that's what faith is like, and that's what the gods are there for, too. They're always there, you know, no matter what comes and goes on this material plane. And
someone just asked a question. I just want to put it out there. Someone asked, who was the Queen Mother of Heaven? I want to put this out there. The Queen Mother of Heaven in ancient Babylon was Semiramis, which was supposed to be the mother of God or the mother of Talmuz. Who was supposed to have had.
It was a little later version.
She was
related
worshipped.
To Ashtoreth and.
Exactly. It was Ashtoreth at another time because.
Just all these different languages.
It depends on what generation
really
you came out of. You had the ancient Babylon, and you had the Babylon during Nimrod's time, and then the worship of her later on down the line. So, you are correct.
Mary through Isis. I mean, the symbolism of Mary with the blue cloak and the
Mary
stars.
Mary is the same thing. The Christian church Mary is Semiramis, it's Isis, it's Ashtoreth. It's the same goddess.
It is, yeah. You know, we think that's really important to have that feminine principle in your deity. You know, I mean, why worship just a male god? You know, that's just half the world. You know, where's the other half?
Well, we know that the ultimate mother spirit is the Holy Spirit, which is Ruach of the Most High. It's not Ashtoreth, the wife of Yahweh. We know Yahweh to be of the fallen one. All right. So another thing, someone just asked about the Queen Mother of Heaven. I want to just make that at this time when it's spoken of in Jeremiah 44, it was Semiramis, the mother of Nimrod, or the virgin child, Talmuz. Now, these are virgin children before there was any such thing as Jesus Christ.
Yeah. It's a very old myth, yeah. And,
so I just want to put that out there. And listen, we know that Christ had a father. His name is Joseph. The Bible tells you, he gives the lineage right there in the same chapter. So let's get out of that real quick, and let me ask you this real quick, because I know the phones are ringing off the hook, and many people want to ask you questions. Matter of fact, why don't we do that?
Why don't we
open it up so that other people can ask questions? Because I can go all day, but for those who just came in, you wouldn't believe some of the things that came out in this discussion. And what's good is, we were able to discuss without condescending, attacking each other. Yes,
absolutely.
We disagree, but the whole deal is, I needed him to come out to show you that the pagans is really, if you want to ask, know the truth, is the mother of Christianity. She spawned Christianity.
We pagans would be the first to agree with that.
This is what I'm saying. And for Christians to come off in a condescending and a pompous way as if they control the way of truth and don't even know that you learned paganism out of slavery, people. When this world was colonized, you were given paganism.
well brought it too, because don't forget about Vodun and Santeria. Those are, you know, even though they're saints, they're still very similar to what we practice. And
well,
you know, many deities.
And
you know, there are a lot of, you know, we consider
and
them.
And our people
got
to get it together. Our people consider them sisters.
Yeah.
Well, what I want to put out there is our people have to come back to the God that's part of the Red Sea. There was many gods in Egypt while our people were enslaved in Egypt. Okay, there was paganism there, but our God showed to be the God of gods. Now, people can make a choice to follow whatever God they want, but at the end, prophecy will stand. And I want to say this. We are the children of Israel. I want to say this. And we, regardless of what's out there and what we have obtained in this world, we must come back to the true God. We must come back to the God who put us in this condition for our disobedience of running to the Queen Mother of Heaven. So that's all I wanted to say on
that.
Well,
naturally, that's a different perspective. But let's open the... Yeah.
Yeah, that's different, but I wanted to put it out there that we were able to have a discussion, and I meant, man, you came with some stuff today. The fact that Islam began in straight paganism, and they would tell you, they would try to convert people claiming that they had the way.
Yeah, everybody does. Uh-huh. And well, no, I mean, all monotheist, monopoly monotheists.
Thank you,
paganism
is a bad rap. It seems like people still in all your rituals and still in your holy days, but yet don't want to give you any credit. What's going on with that?
Yeah, exactly. What's going on with that? People need to open it up a little more and be a little more celebratory and tolerant.
Okay.
But
let's
see what's
going on. Do you mind answering a few questions from the listeners?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Well, let's turn this over to Brother Gaja, and I'll just end it with a few scriptures to end it after. But I thank him for being kind, coming on, and giving his aspect and broadening the perspective so that we can leave our narrow minds to understand what these religions are really about. And I hope a lot of Christians out there, listen, you wake up. All right, Gaja, I'm going to turn it over to you, and you can just put me on. I'll be with you, okay? Because I want to hear some of these questions. Where's Brother Gaja? He's still with us.
Hello?
Oh, okay, there you go. You didn't fall asleep on me, did you?
No, man. No. I can't sleep for this show. let me add to what you just said. Steve Rasmussen, thank you for coming on.
My pleasure. Yeah.
Yeah, it's been very enlightening, and I'm sure that the listeners here who are tuning in have a lot of questions also that they'd like to ask. All right. First, we're gonna go to the phone lines right now. We have our brother Lexwell here. Brother Lexwell, let me bring him in.
Hey, shalom, brothers. How we doing?
Shalom, man. How are you?
Hey, God, hello. I heard the show yesterday. It was great.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a prototype show. We're trying to build it up, you know?
Well, yeah, that was cool, man. It was very cool.
Man, bless, man. And how's everything on your side?
Hey, man, going downhill fast, but I'm smiling.
All right, man, cool. You want to put your question or a comment?
Yeah, actually, man, you know, there's so much covered, man. I don't even know where to start. Hi, Steven. How you doing, man?
Hi, doing good. Thanks.
Hey, that's good. Hey, now, not to be rude, I was listening, and I thought I heard the final statement of, you know, the which God do you serve? And I thought that I heard you say that you didn't know.
No, I didn't say that.
Sorry.
No, we were talking about the origins of the gods, you know, and I said that's something that I'm not sure any human could pretend to know, and it would be arrogant of me to presume. You know, but no, I know very well which gods I worship, yeah. There's more than one, and they're very, very helpful, efficacious. They answer prayers. They give me faith and hope, and all the things that people say about Jesus, Jesus and Mary, and Yahweh, or and I would venture to say even y'all's experience with Ahaya, you know, really we feel the same way about our deities, that they're there to help us, and they do. You probably had a question behind that, right?
Well, could I read something to you?
Sure.
This is from a book called The Satan Hunter. Yes, The Satan Hunter by Thomas W. Wedge with Robert L. Powers. Okay, now these are ex-policemen, and they would go to crimes, and, you know, they would talk about how if satanic crimes were committed, that they would be covered up to keep the public calm.
Oh, that's a fallacy. What year was that book published? First published.
1990, copyright 1988 by Thomas Wedge.
I knew it. See, that's right when all that, like Geraldo Rivera was trying to do a show on that. That was a big thing going on right then, was the claim that there were all these satanic murders going on and being covered up. And finally, the FBI started investigating, and they found absolutely no evidence whatsoever of it. And they found that children were being coached in these so-called memories they were having of satanic abuse.
What do you mean, kids on milk cartons, or which kids?
Kids that were testifying that supposedly the Satan worshippers had come and taken them to this island, and they'd had to witness these flesh-eating rituals and all this wild stuff. And the FBI found that the handful of people were really, you know, kind of like coaching them to believe this stuff and to say this sort of thing, and they have never once found any evidence for any of that, and we know of no one who's ever done that. It was really just kind of a hoax that was ginned up in the late 1980s, and partly thanks to Geraldo Rivera, a real noted scholar.
Is it
before you even read that, that's why I wanted to know what year it was written. That was right about the time when I was receiving my training as a priest and as a Wiccan priest. And we actually, the coven I belonged to, the high priest actually went on TV a few times there on the West Coast where I lived. And, you know, to kind of deal with those rumors and lies is what they were, really. But they made some people a lot of money, like probably the authors of this book. So I'm sorry to, you know, kind of put that down like that, but that's really what was going on at the time.
Technically, you don't even know what I'm going to read, but it's...
No, I don't, but... let me go ahead and let you read that. Go right ahead.
Interesting and articulate white witches, meaning good witches, who agreed to answer my questions were the husband and wife singing team who identified themselves as Kenny and Tripazora, or something of that nature. They were making a living as entertainers, mainstream folk musicians who sell to the general public. But Kenny adds that they were also Wiccan or pagan. Trapezora defines Wiccan as a wise one who shapes things. The Wiccan religion is based on natural cycles of the earth and all things related celestially. We work with seasons and phases of the moon with multiple facets of creating energy, which we term God and goddesses. Kenny interrupts his wife to give his definition of paganism in general. We worship the creator, just like any Christian or Jew, but we see the creator as all things as being both male and female, meaning androgynous. It's not written in, I'm just saying that. Since life was both created by male and female, we term the female aspect of creation as the goddess, while the male aspect is the god. We do not see the goddess and the god as being above in the heavens, but being all around us in earth. Kenny says the difference between dark and white crafts is night and day. He adds, during the Middle Ages, the Catholic Church wanted to erase any religion that was not Catholicism. I just want to skip down. Our God has horns because he represents both animals. There are many names for our God, who is called in general terms the Horned God. Many cultures with many languages knew him, so there are many names. Among them are Pan, Kernunos, Mars. So you understand what this is saying. Mars,
mm-hmm.
Zeus.
Yeah, and so far, yeah, he's right on everything. Yeah, I'd agree with all of that. I mean, yeah,
we
I know
do not worship many gods, but rather one god and one goddess which have many names. Now,
I'm sorry, read that part again.
It says, we do not worship many gods, but rather one god and one goddess who have many names.
That's how a lot of Wiccans view it, yeah. And
are you by a computer by chance?
Yeah, I am. Why?
Hey, Lex Will, real quick. Let me ask him, because that information came out as profound.
I know, right?
Let me ask you, Steve. Is Zeus one of these gods? Like when the ancient Romans and Greeks worshipped Zeus, would that be the pagan god Pan also?
That's what this book is saying.
No, I'm asking him if that's what he knows.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, a lot of people would say that, but I think that's, I personally, based on my experience and study, I think that's overgeneralizing. I think that, yeah, ultimately they're all one, but then ultimately all humans are one humanity, right? We're all one people. I mean, you know, practically identical. But yet there's different cultures, you know, we have different names, we have different faces, you know. So, yeah, we're all one, but we're also different, you know, and that's...
Yeah, but I'm asking you in specific, in ancient Rome, when they was worshiping Zeus, is that synonymous with Pan?
Sometimes they, in certain places, they worshipped, what they call him, like Hermes. I mean, there were certain places where they had, where they saw Hermes and Zeus as the same god, but most of the time I think they saw them as separate. You know, they're closely tied to the astrological planets. Zeus is Jupiter, the planet Jupiter.
Yeah.
And
so I'm asking,
Mercury, Hermes
is one of the gods. Let me ask you in another way. Is Zeus one of the gods that you acknowledge today?
We don't really call him Zeus, although that name comes from Deus, that same universal term, you know, Diao, Iao,
no,
that was about earlier.
Because I know that Jesus, the word Jesus actually comes from Zeus, too.
Yeah, it comes from the same root. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, it's all that universal name, that universal vowel spectrum, as we call it. We often do pray and do spells to Jupiter, the astrological planet, which we do see as a god, most of us, yeah.
The reason I'm asking, and I'll yield, is because I wanted to put that out there when that Zeus popped out at me and I did the research, come to find out the Roman Catholics under Constantine, that they actually changed Christ's name to Zeus. That was a deity that was in ancient Rome. That because there was no J's in the Hebrew language. So I want to put that out there that
It was a Yahushua.
Yeah, some say Yehoshua. The ancient is Yeshaya, but there was no J's. That's why when you speak to Spanish people, you ask them, well, what's Jesus' name? They say Jesus.
Yeah.
So it's really synonymous with the same God of the pagan.
The word origin is,
I just need to hit that part. Okay, go ahead. I'm gonna turn it back over. Go ahead, Lex.
Hold up. Let's just on hold real quick. We have another caller from the UK coming in. We have Brother Josh on. Brother Josh, can you hear me?
Shalom. Yeah, can you hear me clearly?
Yeah, I'm hearing you, brother. I'm hearing you. Go through. You have a question or a comment, real quick?
Both really. I'm gonna have to talk pretty quickly because my battery on my phone is about to die. So I just want to run through this little bit of information that I have here in front of me, what I've just been writing down as I've been listening to the show. Now, could I ask Steve, just before I go through this quickly, have you heard of Madame Blavatsky?
Oh, Madame Blavatsky, yes. Yeah, there's a controversial figure.
Okay, well, just for the benefit of the listeners, her full name is Helena Petrovna Blavatsky.
Yeah. Petrovna, yeah.
Now, okay, she was a witch. She lived during a time of 1831 to 1891.
She would and not have called herself a witch.
Pardon?
She would not have called herself a witch.
Okay, maybe so, but according to my research, I found out that she dealt with the occult. And
yes.
she's the founder of the Theosophical Society.
That's
yeah?
true, yeah.
Okay, now, what she's really responsible for, in layman's terms, is bringing these different segments of Satanism together to unify them. Because the Bible itself tells us that there are many gods in the earth, and all the gods of the nations, and nothing but idols. That's what the Bible tells us. Now, if you actually look at this society in particular, the seal that they've incorporated with it, yeah? Now, let me describe this, yeah? Imagine you've got the Star of David. That's the center of the seal, yeah? Inside of the Star of the David, you've got an anchor, which is the cross with, like, the circle bit on top of it.
Mm-hmm,
that's
just
in the middle of the
yeah.
Star of David, yeah?
Yeah.
Now, around the star, you've got a Ouroboros. Is that
oh,
correct?
Right. Yeah, very sacred
yeah.
symbol, ancient, yeah.
Which is a snake, which is a highly satanic symbol. And
no,
it
no, not
represents
at all. It represents eternity. It's like cycles.
Well, that's what I was going to say. It actually represents procreation as well.
It
supposedly.
Has a lot of meanings. You can even see it on your computer when a Java program is running.
Yeah.
It's a little circle
well,
going around eating itself. It represents time and eternity, which consumes itself.
Exactly. It's philosophy. That's what it is. A lot of people could attach a lot of different things to it.
Yeah.
This is my point at the top. Let me just get this out. So like I said, my battery is going to die here, so I do apologize if I'm speaking over you. At the top of this seal, you've got a seal called Aum. Have you heard of that? It's a seal that the Hindus use.
Oh,
yeah?
Yeah.
So basically, my point is in this seal, they've thrown a lot of things together, and this is what... this is the symbol that we can hold alongside the Theosophical Society, yeah?
Yeah.
Now, okay. this organization was formed in 1875, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And basically, yeah, it's the spiritual principles and search for truth. This is where the word theosophical comes from. It comes from the Greek word theosophy, yeah?
Yeah.
Now,
theosophy.
Pardon?
I think it means theo means God or deity, and sophos means knowledge. I think if I've got it right.
Wisdom, exactly.
Wisdom,
the goddess Sophia,
go.
Who you can find in the Gnostics.
That's
yeah.
It, yeah.
Okay, and it's comes from now. Theosophy actually comes from it's a system, esoteric philosophy. This is where it comes from. You can attach alchemy to it, astrology, yeah, spiritualism,
yeah, they
wrote everything in. Satanism.
Yeah.
Now this is my point. This is the point I want to make before my phone goes dead. Yeah, we can go to and fro talking about good witches and bad witches and what sort of pagan establishment people out there in today's day and age are attached to. But it's got a head, and the head of all these societies. Yeah, there is sat a god who is diverting all worship to himself. Yeah? And this god is what we know in the Bible as Lucifer, Satan. Yeah? But let me tell you, Satan is just the title. Yeah? There's Satans in this earth today. And these Satans in the earth today, notice that plural, are the evil spirits that are caught up in this world, who we know, according to the Bible, have proceeded, yeah, from the bodies of giants, according to Genesis chapter 6 in the Bible. So until we know the origins of these gods that we're following, we shouldn't be following them.
Well,
the
who
Bible
are we going to
actually
believe, though? I mean, I don't believe a bunch of scribes who had an agenda, and their agenda was to trash everybody else's religion. And I also know for a fact that there is no Satan running theosophy or Wicca or anything else like that.
Josh, let me say something real quick, and I want you know, and I'm gonna let you come back in, Josh, because this is what I want Steve to understand, and maybe he'll take this back with him a little bit. You have to realize, Steve, and I'm not here to preach to you tonight because we really brought you on the back of this minister who didn't know that Christianity foundation is paganism. But I want to say something. You have to realize that he wasn't always Satan. That's why I asked you, and I had the knowledge of the origin of spirits when I asked you the question. Because I ask other pagans the same thing. What is the origin of these gods you worship? Because I know they do things for you, but if you don't know the origin, you can't say for sure what they're not.
But
and
do
I'm going to
really
say
know
this.
The origin of the Bible. I mean, that's
I'm
the
saying,
problem
but
there. You know,
let me make my point, because I can answer those questions if you really want to get the answers to them. My point is, you have to realize when he fell, he wasn't Satan. He was Lucifer originally. And he tempted with good and evil.
That's according
so
to one mythology,
so let me say this. So even when you go into witchcraft, which our people were forbidden to deal with, but the Gentiles were dealing with it, when you go into witchcraft, of course there's good and evil witchcraft. Why? Because that is the tree that was presented. So, yeah, there's going to be a good part, but there's a very dark part, too, and it's one God over both parts. My problem now is, and maybe we can talk about this, is the same way Christians are denying their origin of paganism, pagans are denying their origin God, which is the fallen God.
We deny the origin that's attributed to us by Christians or by the Bible, and we dispute, you know,
I go beyond the Bible scrolls, because I go into the scrolls before they were translated.
Well, nevertheless.
The Bible is just an English translation of ancient scrolls, but I speak Hebrew. I went into the Hebrew scrolls. I got the Hebrew scrolls.
Right, but
so
still, that's still the same people trying to push the same monotheistic agenda. God's the only way. Everybody else is evil, you know. Their way is mixed with evil, but
Steve,
our way is pure. Well, you know,
Steve,
why we don't
not,
ship a single
Steve,
book? One,
Steve,
we don't think one book can give us the truth. You know,
I understand
the book that advertises itself is that. That's just, you know, you can advertise anything and people will believe you, but is it really? Well, we test it against our experience of the world. We test it against what science is learning about the world, and we find that it's, you know, the truth is just a lot deeper than that. It's a compendium of many sources, the Bible is, but it's not the be-all and end-all, and it's convenient and easy to think it is, to have that one answer for everything, like having one instruction manual. That's great if you got one computer, but what if you got a bunch of different computers that you got to fix? You know, then there's going to be a bunch of different instruction manuals, and that's just the nature of the universe. It's diverse, you know, it's poly, it's not mono. So that's how we feel about it, and, you know, people are always trying to accuse us of being evil or dabbling with something dark, you know, but we know better than that, because we have the courage to actually explore the occult and find that it's not as scary as people think. People shut it off because it's powerful. They wall it off because it's powerful. But it's powerful because it reaches into your very heart. It's founded on love. It's founded on harmony and the principles. You know, the same principles in music. That's what the occult is based on. I'll just put that out there. That,
well, brother,
show
brother, real quick, I like to say this, because, listen, like I said earlier, I'm not here to accuse you of anything. Oh, I told you we disagree with this from the beginning. But what I'm saying,
I
humbly respect the fact that you are willing to admit what you're dealing with. But like I said, I wanted to put it out there that there's two sides to the tree of good and evil. So usually, you know what? And it's ironic, myself, and I'm going to let Josh back in. I'm glad he called. Ironically, you know, since I have dealt with pagans, because I've dealt with Christians too, I've never met a pagan witch who said that they were one of the bad ones. They
said I've never met a Christian.
That they were good. You understand? So, but yet, when I asked the question that can it be used for evil, everyone said the same thing. Yeah. But I haven't met a bad witch yet who have admitted it. So what I'm saying is, according to what we believe and we have the right to, if we don't do, of course it's powerful. Lucifer once was a high archangel next to the Most High himself.
Step
he
away
was
from
high.
That mythology. You know, step into something deeper is what I'm saying.
Brother,
you can find
brother, if everything, brother, when you talk about Pan, don't you know Pan is written in Greek and Roman mythology?
It means, well, Pan, the word means all, yeah.
I'm saying, I ain't talking about the word. So if you want to talk about mythology, I can pull up to Roman mythology and Latin mythology right now, and every name you mention is in Greek mythology. So you can't say, let's step out of mythology, when everything you said tonight was part of ancient Greek and Roman myths.
No, it's not just. It's reflected there, but it's also based on experience, on my experience.
But that's the ultimate test. Steve, we have experiences too, though.
Yeah, and I bet they're
from
mine.
And our experiences just don't come from us believing something that we read it.
Well, I would
that's
hope
what
not.
You have to understand. By the same token, how you've seen your God, we've seen the power of our God. So there's a mutual respect here. We can have a conversation, but you just can't push off what we believe is myth because we have seen greater things, brother.
But you're speaking now from your experience, your personal experience.
Exactly.
That's what I'm saying. But when you start talking about pagans being dabbling with Lucifer, that's not in your experience. That's what a book tells you.
But my experience confirms the book.
In many parts, but it won't confirm that part. I can guarantee
that book confirms our part. And let me say this, brother, and I just wanted to put this out there when it comes to mythology. Let's put that to the side, because everything I've spoken to you was based on knowledge and understanding all night and history all night. So let's not just push it off. The Bible is not just a mythological book, okay? And that brings the disagreement, because now you are doing what you claim Christians been doing. Let's just say you what you believe, and we believe what we believe. Now, whether or not you would want to accept that, if your God did all these good things for you and was Satan, it wouldn't be a big deal, because that's your God.
Well, Satan's not our God. That's a Christian God.
Well, maybe
Muslim too. But
listen, if you believe Satan is a myth, what's the big deal?
Well, I wouldn't want to believe in a myth. I mean, something that's merely a myth. It wouldn't do me much good, would it?
Let's let it be. I'm going to yield because I came into Josh, but I couldn't hold myself. I'm going to restrain. Go ahead, Josh. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
it's cool, man. It's all good. Yeah, Steve, I just want to make clear, like, I haven't called in today to attack paganism in any way, shape, or form. Well, the reason why I called in is to give and to share my understanding with you and the listener in terms of what I've discovered through research. And a lot of my research has led to this Madame Blavatsky,
Well, she's a figure, yeah,
she's,
but not a Satan worshiper.
No. Okay, well, I'll tell you the information that I've got on her. I know that Hitler respected a lot of her writings, a huge amount. He even said in one of his speeches that we will wash off the Christian veneer. They use Christianity as a way to go to war. I'm gonna end very very quickly because I just want to get this point out. Yeah. Now, one of Madame Walowski's predecessors, she's called Alice A. Bailey, yeah?
Oh,
she's
Alice
actually,
Bailey, yeah.
She plays, you've heard of her, she plays some part in United Nations today, yeah? She's if you look it up, you'll find out she's quite a big head.
Okay.
Yeah? Now, let me, cutting back to the point, yeah? One of her 10 strategies, yeah, for implementing, and I'll call it Satanism because I am entitled to my belief and that is what I believe ultimately it is, yeah. But all these spirits that are in the earth, according to my understanding and belief, are from Satan, yeah. All the spirits in the earth today being worshipped, yeah. Now,
that's rather present.
Now.
So
well,
actually,
like I said, it's my opinion, but let me just focus on these strategies that she wanted to implement. Yeah, one of them is push God out of the schools. Yeah, it says people must be free to abort unwanted children. If a man can have sex and then live without the consequences, then the same should be true for a woman. Yeah, and I'm not going to read through all 10, but.
And make out a big conspiracy about it, but it's really...
Let me just make a quick announcement real quick. We're down to the final 10 minutes of the live show. We're going to go into overtime after the 10 minutes. So for the people tuning in via the Skype, now would be a good time to Skype in. Or you can call in, which is the number 646-200-4309. You're locked into the Search Engine International. I'm your host, Gaja. We have Elder Rakar. We have Steve Rasmuffin, who's a pagan. And we have Brother Josh on the phone lines at this minute. What else? Did I miss anything? Well, yes. We have a few more callers here that's waiting to come in. But letting everybody know now that there's 10 minutes to go for the normal show. If you want to continue with the show, you need to call in now or within the next 10 minutes. The number is 646-200-4309. Now, for the people on Skype, if you click on the live link to the show, you will see a Skype link right beside it. You need to click on it, and you'll be able to call in. All right? And continue with the show once you go into the overtime. We have 9 minutes left. Sorry, Brother Josh, I'll put it back to you.
Right. One of the last points I'm going to make real quick, because my phone is about to die now. One of her points that she's been quoted to have said is diffuse religious radicalism, destroy Christianity. Christianity says that Jesus is the only way. Diffuse this by A, silencing Christianity, and B, by promoting other faiths, the creation of interfaith harmony. Yeah? And the last point, and like I said, I haven't gone through all 10 points. The last point says, and it does talk about the homosexual agenda also. The last point says, in this 10-point plan, which Madame Walowski has written, says, get the church to endorse every one of these 9 strategies. Get the church to accept these principles and say that they are okay. Then legal ground is given for these values to get a foothold. And I think this has a lot to do with the question that Elder Rakar asked in the post to, okay, when did pagans begin to lift up their head again? When did they stop getting thrown on the fire, so to speak? Because we know that history speaks of this, and now people have the right to practice whatever faith or religion that they want. It's that simple. And all I'm saying is the reason why I brought them points out, so I don't want to go too to and fro with you and on and on and on because
I doubt she wrote any of those things. That sounds like Protocols of the Elder of Zion stuff, you know. I mean, there's a whole right-wing industry devoted to manufacturing that kind of propaganda and tying it all together into one world conspiracy, you know, when really there are much more obvious and dangerous conspiracies going on in the headlines every day. But anyway, go on.
Okay, well, no, that's it. And I just wanted to, and I'll say it again, if anybody wants to research this for themselves, if it's your opinion that it's a conspiracy, then by all means you're entitled to that opinion. But what I find very interesting and the reason why I brought that information up is because these 10 strategies of nearly almost every single one of them have been enforced.
Well, somebody
even
probably
to the point,
wrote
even to the point
it
where the pardon?
Well, people tend to write those things after the fact and then claim that they were written earlier as a big plan, you know. But yeah, that's how a lot of
but
stuff
who's
is.
I understand what angle you're coming from, but you need to understand who's really going to achieve anything by doing that. I mean, this has been written, yes. I claim that I know who's written it, and you can say, well, you didn't see her write it. It could have been anyone. It could have been written after
no,
these
things.
No, I
would go to Madame Blavatsky's own writings and be sure that that it's actually written and published by her, not this second-level stuff where people claim to be quoting. You know, you always go to the primary source. Always, advice with rumors. Always check with the source. You know, call the person they're talking about and say, did you really say that? You know, instead of just going around saying, oh, so-and-so said, so-and-so said, you know. But that's really where, you know, I think a lot of that stuff comes from. Is,
Have you actually researched her for yourself? Can you tell me anything about her?
I have my own problems with theosophy. I think it's very, very white, you know, white biased and biased against black people. It's got that whole Aryan tinge to it, you know, the superior white race. But that's a whole.
Do you believe that there is a superior white race in the earth today who could possibly be in control of it? Well, again, I suggest that would be another thing that you'd have to look at in order to come to do you know what I mean? A sort of accurate decision of whether this is actually a conspiracy or not. In order to do that, I find the best way is trying to put pieces of the jigsaw together and see
right,
if you can see the overall picture.
You have to be careful where you get those pieces from because there's a lot of people claiming that, you know, that claiming to put them together when they're actually just trying to fit them into a preconceived agenda. I mean, if you want to see what's going on in the world today, just follow the headlines with Wall Street and the centralization of financial power, you know, and basically we really are being run by just a handful of, well, you know, like they say, 1%, actually 0.1% of the planet, you know, but they're in it purely for the greed, purely for that materialism I was talking about earlier. I don't think they care whose temple they worship in. They just care about the money and the real estate that temple's built on that they want to buy and sell.
Exactly. That's why I'm saying it's not such an overwhelming thing to maybe comprehend that there is a minority of people who happen to be white in this earth today who are in dominant control of it. Now, color's irrelevant to me. I'm just saying it could be. It could be. Now, in order to find out, we need to apply a lot of research. Now, of course, you need to sift it through. Of course, there's a lot of lies out there. But what I'm saying is, ultimately, my point was today, paganism is the same thing, and it's practiced on different levels. And
but
if you find the root of paganism, you're saying, on one hand, you're saying Christianity, yeah, may worship Satan. But all the ceremonial dates that Christians are dealing with comes from paganism, yet you're not accepting the fact that paganism ultimately could be paying homage to Satan as well, unknowingly, ignorantly,
by dealing with different spirits, you may be paying homage to a different god. And that's what I don't understand, but I'll let you answer that, but I'm coming off the line now, my phone is about to die, and I'm calling from the UK, so I'm going to have to go, but thank you for your time, I appreciate you listening. Okay, Steve, thank you.
Okay, thanks for calling.
Okay, we got a lot of people in queue, so we need to keep on going, but I know right now Lex Will is busting right now. I know Lex Will is like, man, I wish I had a couple more minutes. I know he want to come in, but Lex, I'm feeling you out there. All right. Who we have coming on next? Gotcha. Gotcha.
Yeah, okay. I believe Brother Ganja call just dropped. So.
Okay. Well, let's get the next person in. Maybe I can. Let me pull Ganja in from here. Come one moment. Because
right.
Can he? Is there still time for him to call back in?
Yeah. Callers, it's 2 minutes left. You have 2 minutes to call in. Or your internet?
Come on in, Ganja. Come on in. Let me ask. Do you want me to call him in through here? Hold on.
Okay.
Very, very interesting show. Hold on.
Look, he's back. He's back, Elder.
He's back on? Okay. Come on. Come on, Gotcha. Come on again.
Sorry about that, guys. I lost my internet. Let me apologize to the listeners.
Well, we're dealing from three separate countries, so it's okay. All right. Real quick, Gotcha. Who we got next coming on here?
Okay. We had brother Lexwell that wasn't finished, so I'm going to bring him back. He gave way to Josh, being that Josh was calling from the UK.
How you guys doing again?
Brother Lexwell. Okay, guys, hold on.
Okay.
Before you start, let me just make an announcement. We got 1 minute left to the overtime. You need, if you want to go into the show, you have 57 seconds to dial into it right now. All right? 57 seconds to dial into the link. Click on the link and dial into Skype. There's no other way I can get you in from here. So for the guys out there who are listening, please. Try and see if we can get into it real quick. We have 35 seconds.
You know what I'm going to say? I want to say this, too, also. Steve was nice enough to come on the show, and I like the way the show is going. Make sure the majority of people, probably everyone that come on, is not going to agree with him. We all know that. But let's make sure we're respectful, because later on down the line, you know, we're going to need him as a, if he decides to stay with what he's dealing with, I would love to call him in when we're dealing with the Christian. You understand?
Yep.
And he can be our pagan expert. so just be respectful. All right, who you have next?
Okay. For the listeners, let you know we're going over into the overtime show, and for the record as well. This has been the largest listenership of this show since I've been doing it that I've seen on it. Thank you everyone who's tuned in. Once again, Steve, thank you for coming on. It's been enlightening. All right, you're locked into the Search Engine International. I'm your host, Brother Gaja. We're doing the final hour now in overtime. All right, Brother Lexwell.
Yes, sir. Hey, when we left off, man, we just talked about that you guys, that the Wiccans worship. That they do not worship many gods, but rather one god and one goddess with many names, meaning Pan, Kronos, Mars, Zeus, Apollo, Thor, and Odin. Now, when we switch to the Book of Revelation, many people do not believe Zeus is in the Bible, but he actually is. And this is why the Bible is a study guide, and it's very interesting. Revelation chapter 2, 11 through 13, he that hath an ear, let him hear what the Spirit saith unto the churches. He that overcometh shall not be hurt of the second death. And to the angel of the church of Pergamos, right? These things saith he which hath the sharp sword with two edges. I know thy works, and where thou dwellest, even where Satan's seat is. Now, right there, if you said you had your computer, Stephen, if you type in Satan's seat, Pergamos, in the Google, and you hit images, it will show you the gigantic seat of Zeus in Pergamos, in the old world.
Well, that makes sense. Yeah, the Christians would have tried to tar it as the seat of Satan, even if it was actually the seat of Zeus. I mean, that's what I'm saying, you know, is that...
Books, this thing...
Somebody calls you a communist doesn't mean you really are one.
Understand, like, okay, look,
Just say hypothetically, Lex, I'm going to let you come in. Just say hypothetically that Zeus was the Christian Satan. I mean, would that change anything with you? If you knew that was Satan, would that change whether or not you would be a pagan?
Well, that's like saying, just hypothetically, if one were two, you know, or if seven were 12, you know, then, I mean, it's like, well, in reality, I think that, the early Christians were applying the term Satan to every other god but theirs. Every other deity was an aspect of Satan.
But, Steve, I'm trying to get a specific answer. We know what the Christians did. I'm asking you, if you knew that his name was Satan based on everything this religion has given you, would that make a difference to you whether it was Mars, Zeus, Pan, or Satan? Would that make a difference to you?
If you mean the Christian Satan,
they're all the same, brother.
It seems like your problem is how the Christians is demeaning your gods or gods. I'm not even going there. I'm just asking you, if it was Satan, based on everything they've done for you, would it make a difference to you?
Well, that's like asking if your god were Satan, would that make a difference to you? I mean,
absolutely, it would make a difference to me.
But it's not, you know. I mean, it's.
I'm saying, but it absolutely. If I found out my God, like when I was a Christian, and I found out growing up in Christianity that it was paganism, and I looked up paganism in original religions, and I found out the origin of the Bible is absolutely against these different gods. So I believe every god, the worshiping of more than one god, is Satanism in itself. Because
well, then that's where we part ways.
Exactly. So that's all I wanted to say. All right. Go ahead, Lex. I'm done. All right.
Here, you guys had mentioned aliens, and Stephen, you had said they don't come when you call, like the gods.
Well, that's kind of something we joke about, but it's kind of true, too. But we do believe, I mean, you know.
On that statement.
Itself, but my wife has seen some extraterrestrial craft, so no doubt they're out there. I believe they probably are pagan, too. You know, I believe they probably worship many gods themselves. I mean, it's a huge universe, you know. It's a lot of different galaxies within galactic clusters within, you know, just far vaster than we can comprehend. And for us to say that every conscious being out there worships the same deity in the same way as us is just enormous hubris and very, you know, kind of immature, I think, honestly. But that's, you know, but it's only in the last, 40 years that people have even begun to accept the idea that there might actually be other life, extraterrestrial life out there. So I think it's just going to take people a while to get used to the notion that there are many, many, many ways of worshiping the divine.
Right.
I think, you know, probably a culture that's that advanced has probably already realized that. And, but I also want to say that there are also some religions like there's one called the Raelians that believes that all the gods were actually aliens that came to Earth in the past, you know, kind of like in Stargate, right? And and controlled and taught people and all this stuff, and we don't believe that.
We're kind of like in Enoch when it says the watchers went against the will and came to earth.
Well, that's, I know the Bible has some really puzzling quotes in it. I'm not ruling out, you know, nobody would, no Wiccan would rule out that there have been extraterrestrial visits. We wouldn't say that maybe some of them did become worshipped as gods, but we just, what we're saying is that to say that all gods were actually extraterrestrials is just materialism. That's just reductionism. It's just saying, you know, well, there's no such thing as the divine. It was all just...
Well, not really on the alien comment, on the God comment, because you said the aliens don't come when you call like the gods do.
Right, I did say that, and I, yeah.
Alone. Have you read, say, anything about King Solomon and how he called the demons before him?
Oh, yeah, there's actually one of the earliest...
Is there any correlation going on right now that you can think of, meaning you're not calling gods? See, if they were gods, they wouldn't beckon at humans' call. See, is there anything that just from this...
Maybe they just don't want us to attack them with their darn... with our, you know, jet planes like we tend to do.
What I'm saying is maybe with the idea of the Tales of Solomon, do you realize... that not gods that you're calling demons, just like in the Tales of Solomon.
You're assuming that everything is to be put into one of two boxes. Here's the good box, here's the evil box. The world just doesn't work that way. There are many, many spirits. Some of them are...
Hey, Lex Will.
Yes, sir.
God.
Lex Will. I'm glad you brought that. I'm glad you brought that back up. Hold up, Steve, because the reason I ask is because something in Scripture that probably Steve probably never seen, and I wanted to bring it up so Steve can look at it. And I want to read it real quick in Acts the 14th chapter when Paul was teaching to the Greeks and Romans. He was teaching to Gentiles who were pagans.
Oh, right. Is that on the Hill of Mars, I think, or in Athens?
No, not that one in particular.
Okay.
But there was a Hill of Mars there. In Acts the 14th chapter, in the 9th verse, it says, "Then the same heard Paul speak, who steadfastly beholding him and perceiving that he had faith to be healed, said with a loud voice, stand upright on thy feet. And he leaped and walked. And when the people saw what Paul had done, they lifted their voices, saying in the speech of Lyconia, the gods are come down to us in the likeness of men."
Hmm.
And they called Barnabas Jupiter and Paul Mercurius, which is Mercury, because he was the chief speaker.
That passage? Huh. I'll have to look
and
that up.
Listen. Then the priest of Jupiter, which was before the city, brought oxen and garlands unto the gates, would have done sacrifice with the people. Now, these are pagan origin. Which
mm-hmm.
when the apostle Barnabas and Paul heard, they ripped their clothes and ran among the people crying out and saying, "Sirs, why do you these things? We also are men of like passions with you and preach unto you that you should turn from these vanities unto the living God, which made heaven and earth and the sea and all things that are therein." So what Paul was showing was they wanted to give him homage because they seen Paul do miracles before their eyes that only the gods could do. But what this is showing is that ancient pagans had the knowledge of fallen deities or deities coming down from the sky to show power before men. And today they would call that what? Aliens are so-called UFOs. I'm
well,
just bringing this in. I'm going to let you point it out, but let me finish my statement. What I'm saying is one thing that some people out there, and I'm not saying Steve, but some are doing, and maybe Steve don't even know what's going on with this, is that they fragmented what paganism was originally so that you cannot know the origin. Like, all of these things are intertwined. Everything we see within the earth, there's nothing that can't be identified. Everything has an origin, and it's all connected.
There's no thing where something might be out there and maybe these some beings out there. No. Everything, the whole universe is attached, including what we see, which what they call unidentified. And but who can identify it? The scriptures, the ancient scriptures can identify them. They're fallen angels.
Well,
and they're being worshipped. They're being worshipped. Now, I'm saying this because you mentioned earlier, Steve, that you didn't know the origin of them. I'm just putting it out there so that you can do
I
the research.
I said that I wouldn't presume to know. I wouldn't presume that I knew. And I think anyone who does is really overreaching. You know, but let me point out about the gods coming into men. That's actually something that is commonly done in pagan religions, is to call down the gods into oneself. Witches call it drawing down the moon or drawing down the sun. In Vodun, they call it being ridden by the loas. And and it's all around the world in pagan religions. There are different ways of being inhabited by the gods so that you can do those kinds of healing acts and healing works. So probably what they were thinking was, oh, these people have, you know, they may be priests of Jupiter or Mercurius who have, you know, called that god into them. But it's not an alien.
Obviously, Steve, he was a high priest. Obviously, he's in the same position you're in. So
and he may
this
have
is what I'm,
thought, yeah, just
I'm
like
saying,
I found Jupiter
saying,
into me,
what I'm
so
saying.
He
notice,
called Jupiter into
notice,
himself.
Okay, but listen to what I'm saying. Notice. Don't just overlook this. Notice what Paul said to him.
Yeah,
he
said, no, I'm not. I'm worshiper of this god. Yeah.
No. Listen, he acknowledged the gods that they were dealing with as far as the existence of them. He didn't say they didn't exist. What he told them, that step away from them to serve the living God. There is a God who created these gods you're worshiping. And that's what I'm saying. Just don't be too close-minded. I'm not coming at you as a Christian.
I'm not ruling that out either, but I'm saying that.
Oh, okay, all right. That's all I'm saying. Let's just keep the door open. All right, I'm going to yield now. I'm yielding.
I will point out that we actually do, in the Wiccan tradition, have a name for the God who is the origin of all things, which I don't even know. We don't even call him a God. It's beyond that, kind of the principle, the all-pervading, the all-knowing, ever-present. And we call it the Drytan, which is an old Anglo-Saxon word that some people think originally meant Lord. But
and it sounds like dragon.
Well, yeah, it's spelled Drygton, and so it's one of those old, you know, probably they pronounced it Drychton, but
the revelation, he's cast out of heaven, brother.
Not that at all. That's an English word, dragon. That's no, that's totally different. The word just sounds the same, but it's not. It's from a totally different origin than dragon. But yeah, anyway, we do have the concept of, you know, the all pervading, the all knowing, the all powerful. But to us, that principle, and I see this around me, that principle, that being, that one is so vast and so, in so many ways, so remote. That
hey,
just,
let me jump in real quick. Brother Lexwell.
Yes, sir.
Listen, I want to bring in a few more callers real quick because we're running out of time on the overtime, all
right?
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you for that, Brother Lexwell. And let me just bring in the next caller real quick. Okay? All right. We have Brother Brother Kamar with a comment. Let's get that real quick. We have about less than 40 minutes to go.
Shalom, Brother Gaja, Brother Steve, and Elder Rakar. I just wanted to bring a little out. First, I wanted to thank you guys for bringing this show to the forefront. And secondly, I wanted to thank Stephen for his candor when dealing with this situation. But what I wanted to go into, I wanted to ask a question as well. Actually, a couple of questions, and I'll make them short and read a little something as well. But the question I wanted to ask was, are the wearing and use, or even unwittingly use of the symbols in paganism, actually opening up the bearers of these symbols to control for or manipulation of these many beings or spirits?
No, we think of the pentagram as a protective symbol. It's like a hand, a five-fingered hand that averts evil. And in fact, they used to carve it on churches back in the Middle Ages for the same reason. So it's a protective thing. It's actually the opposite of that. It helps protect us from negative energy, people's hate and the evil eye, whatever you want to call it. So it's actually the other way around from that.
Okay, when you brought up that deity that you were talking about, you said you made reference to a principle. Now, we study the records of our forefathers, and we were just talking about Paul. And Paul wrote in Ephesians 6:12, "For we wrestle not with flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against rulers of darkness."
I'm sorry, not that kind of principle. A principle, and that's just one word for it. Yeah,
okay.
I mean, what are you going to call it? It's the all, you know, the everything.
Okay. But would you call those spirits principalities or location? Where are they located? The powers, or what would you call these spirits?
That goes back to in ancient. The Neoplatonic philosophers in ancient Roman times, right before Christianity, they several of them kind of saw or developed this whole hierarchy of spirits. Okay. You know, the idea was that just as there are, you know, I think the idea was just as there are hierarchies on Earth, you know, like there's an emperor, and then there's princes, and then there's all these different provinces and that sort of thing, that there must be the same way in the heavens, you know, so there are principalities and there are powers and they all have this rule and so forth. And it's kind of really what it all kind of, just to cut through everything, what it all kind of comes back to is the astrological planets, because usually they come back to seven of them, and each of those seven correlate to one of the astrological principles, like Mars is the principle of aggression, you know, Saturn
okay.
control, that sort of thing. Now I'm using principle L-E, okay?
Yeah, I understand, but you didn't let me finish the verse. It says, against rulers of darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. Mars, i.e. Jupiter, i.e. all of those other celestial bodies, as you call them, are high places. I wanted to go into something as well. You're familiar with the prophet Enoch?
Somewhat, yeah.
Okay, and this alludes to what the elder was talking about earlier, just to piggyback off of him and Brother Lex will. In the book of Enoch, chapter 8, verse 1 through 4, and I'll read it really quickly, it says, "And Azazel taught men to make swords and knives and shields and breastplates, and made known to them of metals of the earth, and the art of working them, and bracelets and ornaments, and the use of antimony, and the beautifying of the eyelids, and all kinds of costly stones, and all coloring tinctures." Verse 2, "And there arose much godlessness, and they committed fornication, and they were led astray and became corrupt in all their ways." Verse 3, "Samjaza taught enchantments and root cuttings, Amoros, the resolving of enchantments. Barakiel taught astrology. Kokabel, the constellations. Ezekiel, the knowledge of the clouds. Arakiel, the signs of the earth. Shamshamel, the signs of the sun. And Sariel, the course of the moon. As men perished, they cried, and their cry went up to heaven." The reason I brought that out is because those all seem to be the model of paganism as far as root cuttings and signs and astrological signs and all of those things. Could you expound on that a little bit?
There are a lot of, you look in a lot of different indigenous religions and they'll say, you know, this is the spirit that taught that and this is the spirit that taught that, and their names for the gods that rule those things. In paganism...
Oh, I know they differ. But...
What they're really... and, you know, so what they're
basically what they'll do in these Old Testament passages, they'll take that and stick it in and call it evil, you know. But in reality, it's what it is. It's like a system for accessing those things. It's, we call it the art of correspondences. And just like the brother said earlier, everything is interconnected. That's what our whole idea is, too, is that everything is interconnected, and it's interconnected in certain ways. And, you know, and you use, by understanding those ways, you can access them and change them for the better, you know. So it's like with the astrological system, what you would have found in a lot of medieval magic books is they would take those names that are in the Book of Enoch and connect them to the planets that they figured
right.
connected to, and, you know, and then say, okay, pray to this deity and do this ritual with these colors and these objects, you know, and that will give you mastery over this particular particular thing that it rules, you know. So like if it's over swords and armor, then that would be Mars, you know, or whatever the name they're using for Mars is, you know, whatever deity they're connecting it to. And like I say, usually 9 times out of 10, it'll come back to something like the astrological planets. There's an order. There's a system behind it, and it's not
okay.
evil. It's science. It really is. You know, it's early
oh.
science, and still
okay.
to this day is valid. It's just taking materialist scientists a while to catch up with the ancient wisdom.
Well, and in all respect to you, we tend not to delve into science. Science to us is false, and we look at it from a standpoint. It's almost like how you view your gods. We hold our God or our power in the utmost and highest respect, to the point of where it's almost and it's no disrespect to you, it's almost a sacrilege to honor anything other than the Most High of Higher. And
that.
for us to go into these things and even the mention of those names, you know, it kind of sends a chill up my spine, so I have to do some prayer just because I mentioned the names in that passage. But the thing we tend to go into when you talked about the fallen angels coming down and sleeping with men, those were the description.
Let me jump in real quick here. All
right.
The time here is coming down, Brother Kumar.
Yeah.
I just want to get in a few more questions real quick.
All right, go ahead. I'll let you guys go ahead and have it, man.
Yep.
Shalom.
Thanks.
And praise the Higher.
Thank you, brother man. Thank you for tuning in.
All right.
All right, man. Shalom. My next question.
Gotcha. It's a lot of points to build a bird out. I wish, you know, but we got to keep it moving. He brought out some real good points. And one thing that I wrote down in the midst of his asking questions, Maybe you can give me some understanding on this, Steve.
Mm-hmm.
You were talking about when it comes to war, the god of Mars being, you know, them doing certain rituals to the god. You heard of this thing under the Roman Empire, and they do this today under the powers in the Western world, the Ides of March.
Oh, yeah, Caesar, beware of the Ides of March. Yeah. That's...
When usually they do their wars, even in the Western world today, America, do their wars around March.
Well, I think that has to do with the weather, but
well,
I think originally March was named after
Roman,
Mars.
Well, it goes back to ancient Roman, and I got it in front of me, the Ides of March, how they looked to do their war at a certain time with their sacrifices to Mars.
They would sign it carefully. They would get omens and auguries and make sure that it was, you know, that they were going to win before they went in.
Exactly.
And a lot of times they would disregard those omens and auguries and go in and fight and then lose, you know. So they learned to.
But let's talk about that ritual though before they go to war. Do you think that was good or evil?
Well, I think war is by and large evil because it's using other people as an end. I mean, excuse me, as a means to your end.
Okay. All right. So we coming around. So answer that for me before we bring in the next question. When they go through their rituals for the Ides of March, you think they're asking for something good or that black or white magic?
Well, okay. I would say that if they were going to defend themselves from an invader, and that's why they were doing it, who was going to come in and slaughter them, then, yeah, that was good. But if they were going to go in and conquer somebody,
Come on now. We know that the Romans were imperialists, and they would consume the whole. So they were known for going into other countries and destroying and making them part of the board. That's what you were doing.
Yeah, I know. And so 9 times out of 10, I would classify it as a misuse of power. Yeah, I mean.
So you would say that was evil, right?
Imperial. I tend to think imperialist aggression is evil. Yeah, yeah. I do agree with that.
Okay. All right. So we got to pull it out of you. But okay, who we got next? Who we got next, Gadget?
Let me see. We have the next caller is Brother Rion. Let me get Brother Rion in real quick.
Hi, how you doing, Shalom?
Shalom, brother. Welcome to the 13th July.
Thank you. I just want to say all praises to the Most High, higher first and foremost. And also, I think y'all kind of went over this a little bit earlier, but I wanted to get in more detail because for the last 2 days, I've been dealing with some other Israelites who are calling on the YHWH, the different names of the Tetragrammaton, and I was trying to explain to them how the YHWH is, you know, different forms of, you know, pagan gods, pretty much. And I wanted to ask, what's his name, John or Steve? What's his name? I'm sorry.
Steve.
Do pagans pay any respect or regard to the golden calf or anything like that, the horned god? And is there any connection to the six-pointed star and to the name like Yahweh, Jehovah? Is that all related? Or do they recognize that as related?
Well, no, I wouldn't say they see them as related, but I would say that they see the golden calf as a remnant in the Bible of a much older, you know, and kind of trying to tarnish a much older and more widespread tradition of the bull god, who's the horned god, and represents the spirit of nature, especially of wild nature, you know, untamed by humans, uncontrolled and powerful and outside of the human realm. So, you know, some biblical scholars say that golden calf actually had to do with a conflict between the priests of Moses and the priests of Aaron, but I won't get into that here.
Go
ahead.
Okay, and also, okay, so you're saying there's no relation between the calf and the six-pointed star?
That I'm aware of. The six-pointed star, like I say, that's a symbol of the intertwining of the above with the below. You know, how everything as above, so below, they call it the principle that... It ties in with that art of correspondence, as I mentioned earlier, that, for instance, you can use a sharp red object to magically call the power of the god Mars. I don't know why I keep coming back to Mars, but but anyway, that's a pretty clear example of as above, so below.
Okay.
So anyway, that's all I'm saying is that the six-pointed star, the two interlaced triangles, that's a symbol of that principle, which is also, you know, in mathematics, they talk about it as fractal geometry, you know, how it, you can even see that they use that six-pointed star as a symbol for when they first discovered fractal geometry. It was through studying the six-pointed star, mathematicians like 15 or 20 years ago. And you can see that commonly, people even print it on T-shirts, that infinitely replicated six-pointed star. So see, there's an underlying principle there that's neither good nor evil, but just kind of there, you know, and kind of universal. And people adopt it and use it as a logo. Well, can't stop them from doing that.
Hey, listen. Brother Ren, is that all you have to say?
Well, I just had two more questions to ask just to get a better understanding of,
Okay, going forward, we got to limit these to 2 minutes per call. I apologize, but we're in the tail end. So we're going to let you go one more, all right? But I would like to say this, and I'm going to let you in. Steve, are you familiar with Moloch?
Yeah.
So who's that?
Well, some say it was a... I don't know. I haven't really studied that, but I know that there have been some scholars that have tied it to a Canaanite deity, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah,
but I think
it fires
to Moloch. Now, that's a very common pagan rite of purification. In Ireland, they used to drive their cattle between two bonfires to purify them of spiritual as well as physical disease, you know, as a magical act. And,
Moloch, let me ask a question because I'm trying to get through these calls. I'm trying to get specific.
Yeah.
Moloch is a name, a term within paganism when it comes to gods. Is that correct?
Not nowadays, no. Nobody that I know.
I'm talking about ancient. I'm talking about what you know of ancient times.
Apparently, yeah. There are very few references. My understanding is there are very few references outside of the Bible to Moloch. So that's one that's kind of been lost. So nobody, the scholars, as far as I know, don't really know a lot about that particular deity.
Okay, and the reason I'm asking that, because I'm trying to tie in some of these questions. What he's relating to is when they talk about the star of your god, worshiping the Moloch, when they used to have children go under the fire under ancient paganism. You do know that child sacrifice was part of paganism in ancient times. You do know that.
Yeah, and... yeah, and that is one thing that we definitely object to.
Okay, well let me ask you a question: is that good or evil?
Well,
that's evil.
I don't know. I mean, I think
talking about child sacrifice, you know that's
bad.
Evil, correct?
I wouldn't want to. I think a lot of people do that in many ways that they just don't realize.
No, I'm talking about killing your child for God. That's
yeah, I
evil.
Think I would consider that a pretty bad thing to do.
All right. So that's what I'm saying. So that's why people out there equate Satan to paganism, because all these things are in ancient paganism. You understand?
It's
when the brother,
yeah.
So listen to what I'm saying. You can't be surprised if someone see child sacrifice as part of ancient paganism, they say, okay, that must be Satan. That can't be good.
Sure, we're lumping it all together, yeah. Yeah, and people just, they don't realize that it was...
Okay, just to get an understanding.
Ancient times, it was extremely diverse.
But real quick, the star of their god, Moloch, was the god of ancient child sacrifice, and the six-pointed star...
I'm not really sure that passage refers to child sacrifice. It may refer to child.
I can give you the precepts where it tell you with Moloch passing your child under the fire. Because
yeah, but
why?
That could be, like I'm saying, that could be like the ancient Celtic thing that the Irish did until very recently, where they would drive their cattle between two sacred fires in order to...
This was actually child sacrifice.
Cattle.
This was
still
child
pure.
Sacrifice. A matter of fact, just for the sake of understanding, you researched that, but I've already done that. Let me say this real quick. The six-pointed star means the heavenly with the earthy. That was the original premise of the star.
Yeah,
going into the ancient fallen angels that dealt with women and brought forth Nephilim of Genesis the sixth chapter. And which all these things was taught under Enoch, which was brought out earlier. Now, to show you that the Bible have historical content, it's not a fairy tale book if you're reading it in proper content. Not like Christians. So what I'm trying to do is merge this understanding so that we can look at the Bible from a different angle altogether. We're not Christians. What we are, you would call us pre-Constantine Christians, before the pagan came in. All right, so who we got next? Because I wanted to put that out there. Yahweh is synonymous with Moloch.
All right. Can you hear me?
And there were sacrifices equated with it.
Shalom. Can you hear me?
I hear you loud and clear.
I can hear you. Yeah.
Yeah, man. Sorry about that. I just have a lot of problems here with my computer. Listen, you know what, Steve, we might have to bring you back on the show again just for our question answer segment, you know. There's so many people here.
The lines are packed, Steve. I mean, let me tell you, this show is international, buddy. You got people from England calling in all over the place.
That's great. I love answering questions, even if I'm not always right. I try to be
back.
I'm gonna bring in is it Ed? I think Ed is also a pig and he's been listening, and then I'm gonna hear what Ed has to say. We'll see if we can keep it down to about 2 minutes, and I'm gonna try and bring in brother Xavier to come in as well.
Guys, if you don't mind, let's give the brother that's coming in 5 minutes, because we gave everyone else a lot of time, and then we'll keep it 2 minutes from there, because I know he's probably busting out with things to say. So let's give him 5 minutes.
Okay, no problem. We have Ed. Ed, are you there? Can you hear me?
I am here, sir.
Welcome to the search engine.
Thank you very much. I just wanted to thank you all for the show tonight and for being so respectful of each other. You had brought up earlier, Steve, or someone brought up the use of sex and ritual. That's known for our listeners as the great rite. I am also pagan. I go by Yoan in Circle.
I'm the principal priest of the Miranda Circle.
I live in Irwin, Tennessee. Right across the border from you.
Where?
In Irwin, Tennessee, right across the border from you.
That is cool.
To make this short, that's known as the Great Rite. And while I've never witnessed the actual Great Rite in practice, there is a symbolic Great Rite for all those who don't know this, and it's fairly common knowledge in books, wherein the chalice is used as representative of the female, and a unsharpened dual dagger is used, called an athame, as a representation of the male. And something might be said by this union, two in one, one by both, that we ask the ancient ones to bless this wine. The athame is then lowered into the cup, saying something like, as the athame is to the chalice, so the male to the female and the lover to the beloved. And from their union, worlds were born. The drink is then offered to each other, saying, may you never thirst. And it's also offered to the circle. Then a plate of crackers, cakes, or whatever you have is offered up. Somebody says, body of the god, blessings of the goddess, in this we taste the sweetness of life, may you never hunger, after which everybody is served, and the priest or priestess will say something like, may you never thirst except for knowledge, may you never hunger except for truth. And that is the symbolic great rite of the union of the god and goddess, or lord and lady, as we call them. And I do appreciate your show tonight. I don't know how much time I have left, but you mentioned Samhain. And that is a time of the last harvest. It's a holy day for us. It's also given thanks to the Lord and Lady for all they've given us throughout the year, which carries us through the winter. And that's about all I have to say. And I want to thank you guys for the show and for discussing things in such an open and forthright manner. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Yohan. Yeah, that was
you're welcome.
Very much for bringing up the... Yeah.
Let me ask you a question, Steve. I'm sorry he got off so quick. I was trying to take my mute off because I wanted to speak to Ed. Let me ask you, Steve.
Thank you.
Oh, he's here. Okay, good. Let me ask you, do you all have acting Christians who are part of a Christian church practicing within y'all union sometimes? Like active
very,
Christians.
Very, very, very occasionally, someone will come along who's curious and open-minded enough to see what we're all about.
But you don't have a Christian that goes to church and then come and deal
no,
with what
we,
y'all dealing
we,
with.
We usually don't. It would kind of be. I think it, in my own, this is just my opinion, that all spiritual paths lead to the same center at some point. But it would kind of be.
Believe me, y'all definitely are meeting at the same point, especially on Christmas.
Right. I don't mean that in a bad way. It's not likely that a Christian would be a practicing Christian and and also be a practicing pagan at the same time.
But yeah, they are practicing pagan. They just don't know it.
Okay, well, okay. I can see where you're coming from because I've listened to the entire discussion on that, and it's true that a lot of pre-Christian customs were indeed pagan with many gods, goddesses, et cetera.
Let me come in real quick. We're down to 10 minutes for the show. I just wanted to ask you, Ed, how did you hear about the show?
Actually, one of my friends on Facebook put it on that Steve was going to be on, and I had heard of Kevin Odenwild before, even though I've never met Steve personally. I know somebody who has, and so I tuned into the show and just to listen to see what was going to be said, and it's been very informative and very nicely done.
All right, man. Cool. Thank you, man. Thank you for calling in.
And, thank you, sir.
We're going to try and get Steve back in another time so we can go into, like I said, a question-answer segment, you know?
Before you, I have to make a few announcements real quick. First off, I would like to say that our Hebrew and Bible Academy begins this coming Sunday at 9 a.m. Eastern. We're going to try to, I think we're going to start this one 8 a.m. Eastern. So just look out for your email. Those who are not involved or want to get involved, send an email to gathering@AOL.com. The other point I want to bring out, and this is also I wanted to say our website is up now, gatheringofchristchurch.org. It's up now and it's up and running. You can become members and we're going to add things as we go along. So I got that out of the way. I want to say this, and this is the thing that's and I thank Brother Azariah for reaching out, getting Steve and getting the guests. He does such a great job. And something else is coming down the pipe with the Brother Azariah. I want to say thank him and thank those out there that allow these shows. And above all, thank the Most High God for allowing us the air we breathe and the spirit to teach this truth. Now, I want to say this too, and this is the part that's really, and it came to my mind. It's like, oh my goodness, here. I grew up a Christian. I grew up, I was born in Lake Charles, Louisiana. And I'm hearing people from the Bible Belt. I'm hearing people, brothers here that are coming on with a Southern accent. And I'm perplexed because mainstream society taught us through media and whatever the case is, that all the Europeans that came over was good old European Christians. You understand? As far as I can see, what I'm hearing here, paganism has always been here.
In fact, we have a big page on our website about Thomas Morton, the pagan pilgrim.
Man, look at that.
Yeah.
Why do you think that they're hiding the paganism roots that came over from Europe?
Well, because it's a threat to their control and power, just like he was. And they ended up, the pilgrims ended up, the Puritan pilgrims ended up persecuting him and cutting down the maypole he'd erected in what's now called Wollaston, Massachusetts, right up from I think the Massachusetts Bay Colony, if I've got that right. And, and the whole story is, like I say, the whole story is on our website, oldandwild.org.
All right.
It's pretty fascinating, and it's that Nathaniel Hawthorne wrote a story about,
Let me come in real quick, please.
Sorry
to interrupt. We're down to the final 6 minutes of the show. Last week we got cut off due to the time. I wanted to say thank you to everyone who has phoned in, and I'm asking Steve. I'm gonna see if we can. Steve. I'm gonna see if we can arrange another show where you can come in. I definitely would like these brothers and sisters to get their questions answered and to make the point. I don't know. Would you be able to come on maybe say next week or something again after that? We'll speak to you on the background of the show.
Hey Gaja.
Yes, sir.
Is it possible that he could just come in the first hour of the next show, just so they can get their questions asked for him? Because I apologize for all of those that I know everyone got their questions lined up. So can you just come on for 1 hour next week just to answer questions? We're not going to go into no dialogue because I guess they can listen to the show and get their questions together. In the first hour, we're going to open it up, just take it from here and answer questions for an hour.
I probably could, yeah. I'd have to double check with that, but yeah, I'll tentatively say yes.
Okay, all right.
I'll be in contact with you guys through Azariah or...
Okay, that's great. And what we'll do is we'll try to have a Christian pastor on that we can bring it all together.
That would be great. Yeah, I'll let our folks know about that.
How about that?
I actually did send out some publicity about this show, so that's and I'm planning to put an archive of it on our website so that people can hear it, and you know, and I'll put a link back to your to the website you just mentioned also.
Okay, great.
So, yeah.
I know it's not too often you talk with people that disagree with you, but respectfully, but respectfully in peace. Christ
well, that's
says
the most productive thing. You know, I think that's how I think truth comes out from, you know, a whole bunch of people debating and disagreeing peacefully. And what that truth is may not be any one person to say, but you know. We all have our different opinions about it, but the important thing is that we're expressing them peacefully with each other instead of with bullets
exactly.
and bombs, you know.
Exactly. And like Christ said, our Lord Yeshaya said, "Have much life within you, be at peace with all men." You understand? So that's the bottom line, you understand? And I mean, what a great dialogue tonight. I thank you for coming on. And how many more minutes we have here?
I think we're down to about the final 5 minutes.
You know what? 5 minutes. Let's give someone else 2 minutes real quick. Come on.
All right. But I'm gonna bring in brother. I'm gonna bring in brother Terrell real fast.
All right,
man. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, how you doing, sir?
I'm good, man. I'm good. You wanna put the question real quick, and then I'll bring someone else.
Shalom. What I wanted to know is because I've been listening, and this has been great, you know what I'm saying? I'm also a Hebrew, and I just came into this truth not too long ago. And for this guy, Steve, to be saying these things, you know, it's great because he's put a new perspective on everything for me. So I also want to say, as I watch TV, you know, I see music videos, I see BT movies and everything, and you notice that they always have this pyramid with the eye, people throwing these horns. And I want to know, is that also of pagan origin? I would like to hear an answer from you and also the fellow Hebrew. I'm sorry, I don't know your name, sir, but I would also like to hear an answer from both of you guys because I see this every day, and it's affecting me because I really want to know what's the origin of this and what's the point. So if you guys can expand on that, that would be a great help to me. Thank you.
It represents the eye in the pyramid represents the all-seeing eye of Providence, and it was originally when the Great Seal was being designed, Great Seal, United States.
Right.
The artist who was not a Mason, but he did adopt a Masonic symbol. And because George Washington had attributed their victory in the Revolutionary War to Providence, you know, that was the word he used. And he said, you know, there's just a lot of times where it was just by sheer Providence that we won. And, you know, so that's what he was trying to symbolize. And it represents, you know, the eye of conscience, really, that sees everything you do. I mean, that universal conscience that we all share that's kind of inborn in us, but, you know, that knows when we're doing good or evil, you know. And that's the way the Masons interpret it.
Okay. Very interesting. So the brother...
It's not the Illuminati.
you know, I've been hearing this Illuminati, and it's become too big. You know, when anything becomes too big to me, I tend to stay away from it because I propaganda. So I would like to know from the brother side, the Hebrew side of things, what do you think about that?
Brother, listen, time is about to end on us. So, Brother Terrell.
I'll answer that next week.
Okay.
You stay tuned next week, same time, and I'll pick up the answer.
Okay.
All right. With that, everybody, man, the conversation is peace. And I'm going to say shalom to all the people tuning in, all right? One love next week, same time. 5 p.m. Eastern, 10 p.m. in the UK, all right? With that, one love, man. Thank you. Shalom.
Thank you. Bless the team.
And we shouldn't act as if we don't hear nor see. Like in the Holocaust, 6 million Jews and 150 million blacks are enslaved. Your faith must see with the one who gave the ultimate sign.